Howdy, folks, and welcome to the February 27th edition of Dead Pit Radio. As always, I am Uncle Bill.
And I'm the Creepy Kentuckian, and this week, it's a tribute, sort of, one of the most infamous horror filmmakers of the 1970s through the 1980s, even on to the new millennium, if you will.
Yeah, I think that tribute might be pushing a little bit. He's definitely infamous, though, in our eyes. When it gets into the 90s and the 2000s, this man knows no bounds.
Ooh, baby. Yeah, this man is Tobe Hooper, and we're going to do a special career retrospective going through all of Hooper's films, talking about them, and that'll be a little bit later on the show. We also are taking your phone calls, talking about Tobe Hooper again, your guys' thoughts. I know that he's got a lot of fans out there. There's actually someone that wrote in that's a huge Hooper fan, and you can give us your opinions on his films through the years. So we have that. We have the new segment coming up just in a minute. We also have DVD reviews this week. Tell them what we got, Uncle Bill.
Well, we've got from Anchor Bay a film that I have no earthly idea why it's even titled what it is. And we'll get into that later on in the review. It's a new independent film called Red Mist.
That's right.
What that has to do with this film, I'll never fucking know.
And we are taking a look at another film. It's a movie that we've never reviewed on Dead Pit, and it's going to remain a secret until the end of the show. This is going to be a surprise review that we just pulled out of our ass last second, because Uncle Bill's a sorry motherfucker.
That's true. So you have to listen to the entire show and wait to find out what it is.
That's right. You won't find it on any listing on Dead Pit. You just have to listen in and be like, oh, my God, they're going to have a shit review on me.
You have to be like John Travolta. Oh, my God, the guy's got reviews. My God.
I can't imagine what it's going to be. We do have horror news to get to. We might as well dive right into that. First up, My Bloody Valentine 3D. This is arriving both on DVD and Blu-ray May the 26th. No specs have been revealed yet, and there's no word if the film will receive a 3D release. The remake actually took in over $50 million at the box office, and it's pretty much, it's a loosely adapted remake from the original George Mihalka film from the early 1980s. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. I actually think that I would love to see what a 3D Blu-ray looks like, see if that would improve it any, because I think the whole deal with that style of 3D and why it doesn't work in home, TVs and stuff, has to do with the resolution. For that to work, it has to have a higher resolution.
Here's what I want to know. Like, I was watching a video that Scab Boy did, and he said that he actually had another version of Friday the 13th 3D, and he watched it with, like, the digital shutter glasses or some shit like that. It was a different kind of glass. How the hell did he get that? Does he actually have the film print of it, or what the hell?
No, I mean, there's actually bootlegs of the original 3D version out there on DVD and whatever.
But apparently, like, a lot of the stuff that he was talking about that we mentioned that didn't work in the version on DVD that we have, the red and blue glasses, actually really does work on that version, like the 3D effects that are supposed to be, like, coming through the screen and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the problem has to do with the glasses, that they are more expensive to make than the shitty little red and blue ones.
Yeah. So I'd like to try it out, though. I want to see a movie like that with those particular glasses just to see if there's a big difference in the way that it's made,
Yeah, for sure.
But anyway, here's, like, the story that I want to talk about the most, because it'll probably freak a lot of people out. This hasn't been brought up a lot on other sites or anything, but Image Entertainment, who we know and love, we've actually reviewed quite a few of their movies.
Yeah, they did My Name is Bruce.
Yeah. Listen to this. Okay. their leading independent licensee producer and distributor of home entertainment program. We all know that. The stockholders voted to adopt the agreement and plan of merger providing for the acquisition of Image by Nix Acquisitions. Under the terms of the merger, Nix agreed to acquire 100% of the outstanding common stock of Image Entertainment for $2.75 per share. So apparently, Image has fulfilled all of its conditions to closing and has requested that Nix close the transaction on February 26, 2009. So Image has been bought up by some other company. So who the fuck knows whatever's going to happen to like their horror DVD releases
hopefully
or anything
they
else like that.
At least come out with Dark Knight of the Scarecrow in time.
That's the thing, though. A bunch of people were talking about this. Dark Knight of the Scarecrow was the one that everybody was waiting on for them to come out. But it looks like under the terms of this, and there's like two pages of this stuff, and I can't read all of it, but under the terms of this agreement, they have been completely swallowed up by another company now. So,
yeah. But, I mean, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow has already... They already bought the rights to that film. It's already a part of Image Entertainment, so hopefully it'll come out. I mean, they've already spent the money on remastering it, and I know that a Blu-ray version they're working on as well. So hopefully that'll because I think that would be an amazing release because that's a pretty cool little movie.
It says Image has informed Nix that it is reserving all of its available rights and remedies under the merger agreement in the event the acquisition does not close. So, I'm guessing that they reserve the right to keep all their shit under copyright if they don't accept the agreement. But by the time you actually this airs, you'll probably know for sure.
Indeed. So, something else, a little bit of interesting info that I found online. An internal document circulated by the William Morris Agency.
Oh, no. Smoking is bad.
Yeah. Smokey the Bear.
Oh, that's Philip Morris, isn't it?
Yeah.
Never mind.
It was picked up recently by a website. It's nature concerned. Kevin Williamson's approach to do Scream 4, 5, and oh yes, Part 6. A new trilogy of Scream films. The document, you can actually look for it online. It basically states that... Williamson's latest deal will have him penning a new trilogy as well as remaking Curtis Hanson's 1987 thriller, The Bedroom Window, which I know a lot of people, that'll piss them off because, you know, Curtis Hanson, he's like the man when it comes to thrillers from the mid to late 80s. The new Scream trilogy is set up with the Weinstein Company. Wes Craven is not officially attached to direct just yet. However, money talks, folks, and I would almost guarantee that he will direct not only Scream 4, but the new trilogy as well. He's not doing anything else. So.
Yeah, he'll just direct that so he can have money to produce his next bullshit drama, like that Music from the Heart or whatever it'll be,
right.
Fallopian Tuba.
What do you think, though, about the Scream? Because, okay, the way I look at it is, I like... at least the first two movies, the Scream movies. The thing is, that was a 90s thing, you know.
Right.
Now, if they modern it up a bit, make it a little Twilight-y, you know, which wouldn't benefit us, but it probably could make a shitload of money if they did that.
I hope they don't do that, but I'm sure they will, though, is the thing. Like, yeah, you're right. That movie is a product of its time, just like any other movie. Like, Friday the 13th is a product of the 80s, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a product of the 70s. It's just, can you really remake that, like, faithfully to the way it was? I don't think so. That shit's been done a million times.
Me either, but I think that we're, believe it or not, we stand up for the Scream films a little bit more than other websites. I know that a lot of the horror journalists out there don't have a lot of kind things to say about that original Scream trilogy, but you know Scream 3 was shitty, but the other ones
were
okay.
They're horror journalists. I mean,
yeah,
just by nature of that word alone, they're dumbasses.
That's true. Now we're horrorologists.
That's okay. The difference. Yeah.
So we know our shit. We got degrees.
So I want this story is basically for like one person in particular because I know that he's a huge mark for all these different films. So Rambo, if you're listening to this, strap yourself in because you're going to enjoy this next little news topic here. This was rumored back in 2007, but it's finally coming to pass, and that is that the Hollywood Reporter is telling us that Neil Moritz and his original films banner are talking to Columbia Pictures for the rights to finalize a deal that would have Moritz.
Hey, Glacier.
Would have Moritz remake the 1990 sci-fi classic Total Recall. Isn't that neat?
No.
Now listen. The original film, of course, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, was directed by Paul Verhoeven, based upon Philip K. Dick's script.
Oh! Philip K. Dick!
Oh, it says, Moritz hopes to retell the Total Recall story in a fresh way, thanks to advancements in technology. Of course he does. And it says they're keeping a close eye on updates as they hear. I don't know why, but that's just one of those movies that it might actually benefit from an update, because it was actually pretty much out of date when it was made. Like, by the time it came out, it looked dated.
Yeah, it was one of those movies where they actually, like, at the time, they tried to outdo what other studios were doing and shit. But, come on, I mean, like, some of the effects in that movie were horrible. Like, the thing I always remember when Arnold has that fat lady suit on or whatever, you know, and how it, like, you're comes off of him and shit. You're like, God, I mean, that just looks so horrible. But
the thing I always remember is fucking awesome is when he falls out of the, you know, the little enclosure where they got the oxygen. He's laying there and on Mars, whatever. And it's obviously like a dummy head, and it's, but it's got the sound effects of Arnold going, its eyeballs pop out like, yeah, that was awesome.
We're going to take a break. We will be back after, we don't have any Back to the Future, by the way. People are wondering that. Adam Beck's been ill for the past 2 weeks. He's almost choked on the death dong.
It's always sad to see somebody go down on the death dong.
Yeah. But, we'll figure out some sort of commercial to play, you motherfuckers. Here on DeadBeer.com.
In your life, you seem to have it all. You seem to have control. But deep within your soul, you're losing it.
Hi, this is Don May Jr. from Synapse Films, and you're listening to Dead Pit Radio.
After a hard day at the office, working up a big thirst, many professionals reach for the smooth taste of Mellow Yellow.
Woo, baby! Mellow Yellow, the taste that beats Mountain Dew.
And now, Mellow Yellow has pictures and all the facts on your favorite NWA wrestlers. Ric Flair, Sting, the Road Warriors.
And even my pretty face.
Head to your favorite store and collect all 12.
Woo! Take it from Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. Make the Mellow Yellow move.
Howdy-ho, folks, and welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. A couple of quick little news items here. The Friday the 13th remake took an 80% drop at the box office this past weekend with $7.8 million for a total so far of $55 million and was at the number 6 spot at the weekend box office. That's a huge drop off. I don't know if I've ever seen that big of a drop off for anything before.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that either. I mean, to go from, what was it, number 1 with the bullet and then all the way down to there, it just goes to show you, like, once people get the initial, you know, nostalgia factor of having a new Friday 13th film out of their system, then you look at the film for what it is, it's probably going to go down a little bit because it's pretty shitty.
I think there was actually a poll on the Dead Pit message board.
Yeah, I saw that. The weird thing is they got you, the poll was to see, like, which one of us would admit that we liked the Friday 13th remake first. They've got you liking it before me. I think you hated it more than I did.
Here, here's the honest thing, okay? I really did, like, I mean, but it's one of those movies that the more you think about it and you're like, well, the Friday the 13th movies, none of them were really technically good movies, right? And I think a lot, like we were saying before about the Scream movies, a lot about Friday the 13th is it was a product of when it was created, you know, in the 80s. So if you think about it more and more, I mean, it's like, it's not like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, a masterpiece. It's not like an Exorcist or Jaws or anything like that, Halloween. So you look at it like that, you can't really be as hard on it as you were, you know, on the Rob Zombie Halloween movie. I will say this. Rob Zombie is technically a fuckload better filmmaker than Marcus Nispel. You know, even though his Halloween movie was blasphemy because that is a classic movie and he pretty much shit. The remake part of it pretty much ruined it. But technically speaking, his movies look and the flow of the movies work a fuckload better than Marcus Nispel.
Yeah, I think so, the Rob Zombie's biggest problem is not his directing, it's his damn writing.
Yeah.
Like, if he'd do something about that, it'd probably be smooth sailing.
But the other thing I want to talk about real quick, this will be really quick because none of us have anything to say about this. I'm just reading this news topic for a good friend, Kimberly Malay. The Grudge 3, Sony's home video division actually announced a date change in their DVD debut of The Grudge 3. It was once scheduled to street in March. The threequel is now scheduled for May the 12th. So it's been delayed.
Is it in 3D?
No.
That'd be awesome.
They missed that boat.
You can see a little Asian kid climb out somebody's hair in 3D.
They probably will have.
Oh!
Yeah, they'll probably have The Grudge 4 in 3D.
Here's what I want to know. This would have been killer. Why didn't they have a promotional tie-in with The Grudge for, like, Head and Shoulders, where some little kid pops out of the back of this woman's head, like, shampooing her hair. Like, oh, you
did use Head and Shoulders.
Anyway, here's a news topic about somebody that I greatly admire, even though we'll probably never get an interview with him, Frank Henlotter. His newest film, Bad Biology. And of course, Frank Henlotter directed such films as Basket Case and Frank and Hooker and Brain Damage and all kinds of killer stuff.
Basket Case 2.
So, yeah, Basket Case 2. His new film, Bad Biology, is coming to DVD, and apparently the UK is going to get it first with the Revolver Entertainment release scheduled to drop on March the 2nd. I can only hope that sometime or another the U.S. gets it and gets it soon, because I've been wanting to see that film since I heard about it. And I've seen, like, some of the previews and the clips from it. It looks absolutely horrifying and disgusting, which is something you can pretty much count on from him.
Hell yeah. So, there's already talk. You know the remake of The House on Sorority Row, right?
Yeah.
The remake of that comes out in theaters October 2nd, oddly enough. That's even stranger than the My Bloody Valentine thing, because House on Sorority Row, I think it was sort of a hit when it came out, but it's like one of those movies that over the years just hasn't really gained any sort of like cult status or anything. But they're already talking about a possible sequel to House on Sorority Row, the remake. Written by Josh Stahlberg and Pete Goldfinger.
Goldfinger!
The star, actually, of the remake, Brianna Evigan, talked about the possible sequel. She said, I think Sorority Row 2 is in the midst of writing right now. She was asked if her character would return. She said, I think so. I'm not positive yet. We'll see. My character will definitely be able to return because I didn't do it. I'm a dumbass.
See,
but we'll see what happens if there's any other projects I'm working on at the same time as well. So we all know we can't wait to see what Brianna Evigan is going
to
be doing.
Yeah,
anyway.
If you listen to that quote, then you realize, like I was talking about this in the last video I did, people that don't have anything to say about projects that they're in, that's what I'm talking about.
Yay!
Yeah, it's me! I hope to God I get asked to be in the new house on Schroeder.
I hope I'm back in and I didn't die the last one. It was, oh, shit. I was fine.
They didn't kill me off for the last one. I'm not going to try to ruin anything for you. I'm dumb.
Yeah. Oh, okay. This is another film, though, the one I'm getting ready to talk about, that has been rumored for probably about 2 years now with no discernible direction as what's going to happen. But Alexander Aja's Piranha 3D.
Ooh, baby.
As, of course, the remake from Joe Dante's original from 1978 has been moved back again, as it was recently revealed to MTV. He says, we pushed production back to spring for weather reasons and location reasons. There's so many problems that we're going to have to solve. After doing a movie with mirrors, where it was kind of like a nightmare to avoid all the reflections, making a movie in 3D underwater and on the water is going to be the biggest challenge I've ever had to accomplish. I'm Alexander Aja, though. I made a movie about mirrors.
And again,
killer nuns.
Dramatic men.
Says, focusing on making sure the 3D experience is the best it can possibly be, he says, something I've been trying to do for almost 10 years now is to make movies where the audience is not watching a story or watching some actors, but where the audience is crossing the screen and getting on the other side of the mirror. He's a real big fan of mirrors, and if you will, and lives the nightmare of the screen with the protagonist. So, there you go.
The long delayed and highly anticipated, all the boys love Mandy Lane, might actually get a theatrical run.
No, it won't.
Come July of 2009.
No, it's not going to.
The Guillermo del Toro produced sci-fi horror flick. Splice is aiming for a release in September 2009. And The Clock Tower, Uncle Bill, the big screen adaptation of the Capcom best-selling survival video game, which I've never heard of, is directed by Martin Wise, who... That name sounds familiar. What the fuck else did he direct? Hills Have Eyes remake. Was that him? I think it was.
Hills Have Eyes remake. You mean part two? Because it was
Alexander Hills Have Eyes part two remake. I mean, that's what I mean. Martin Wise, was that him?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Who cares? Who
Looking
that
for
movie?
A 2010 release. So there's some upcoming horror releases possibly for us. So screenings.
Yeah.
Opening nationally, Uncle Bill. This. Tonight. Shit. It's Street Fighter 2, The Wrath of Chun-Li.
You win. Perfect.
Hadouken!
Sonic, boom.
Boom.
Anybody looking forward to this movie?
I'm looking forward to it.
Have you seen?
I want to fucking see it.
If you've seen the trailer of this movie, that's got to be one of the sorriest looking films ever.
I wonder if it's going to have people from Street Fighter 2 Turbo, like Cammy.
Yeah. Who was the other guy? The Rastafarian guy. There was like...
Well, they had T-Hawk.
Oh, Jesus. That's bad.
DJ,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so as far as DVD releases go, this is going to be one of the worst freaking weeks I can ever recall any DVD releases. So this is March the 3rd, next Tuesday.
Ruh-roh.
You've got Attack Girls Swim Team versus the Undead. So that sounds like a good one. That starts
off. We get that one for review.
It starts off well. You got The Burning, not the one you're thinking of. This is 2006 special edition.
This is The Burning that you have down in your crotch.
Yeah, from Pathfinder. You've got Dead in 3 Days from Dimension Extreme. The Exorcist Chronicles special edition re-released from SRS Cinema, which I'm assuming has nothing to do with The Exorcist. Gone the Way of Flesh from Cut and Run Tempe Entertainment. The Hunchback of Notre Dame, 1982 version from Sony Pictures. In Search of Lovecraft from Midnight Releasing. The Silence of the Lambs Blu-ray from MGM Fox, which you ought to be getting.
I better be getting that MGM Fox. Fuckers.
Taste of Flesh from Brain Damage and Wet Kiss Special Edition from Burning Moon.
Oh,
I can't imagine buying any of that shit.
I want to get a wet kiss on my balls, baby. That's what I want. From Sweet Sapphire!
Oh, Lord. So, anyway, that's DVDs for March the 3rd. Enjoy the hell out of those.
Yeah, so, what we're going to do right now is take a break. We will be back to talk Toby Hooper. The retrospective, ain't that right, Uncle Bill?
That's true.
So, after this on deadbeat.com. deadbeatnow.com. You fag.
You don't talk about me that way. You eat my ass.
Aren't you on my dick now?
On the dark side.
Tales from the Dark Side. Scary fun for your home VCR.
Dark Side coming out of the news.
Howdy, folks, and welcome to the career retrospective section. We're going to be talking about Toby Hooper.
Oh!
This is interesting because we've done a lot of these, and most of the time, well, we've done a few of them. Most of the time when we do these, it's about somebody whose career is like, we like the majority of everything that they've done in their career. But this retrospective about Toby Hooper,
it's not the case.
It's a little bit different. This is just more along the lines of, there's some stuff that's really classic. There's some stuff that's all right. There's some stuff that's hideously fucking bad.
That's,
and then there's just some stuff that's so bad that it's awesomely good. So I don't know where all this is going to fit in, but we'll try to sort through
it. Yeah, some of this stuff we'll probably skip over because I haven't seen, like, the TV stuff and shit like that. We probably won't touch on that too long. But let's go ahead and get started. Actually, Hooper started his career with a movie that's, I think it's a lost film now, called Eggshells, which I think we were talking about that with Alan Danziger a little bit because he was in that film. Sort of like a student film for Hooper. It was made in the late 60s.
And the only thing I know about that film is that it did have some of the people that would go on to do the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it was one of those films that was heavily inspired by LSD. And it was like an avant-garde, psychedelic type of film.
Yeah.
So, which,
I don't know of a lot of people that's actually seen the movie.
I don't think, can you get it? Like, I don't think it's
I think it's lost. It's like one of those movies that, I don't even know if Hooper ever saw the finished movie. I know that Danziger, we're talking to Alan Danziger about it, he'd never seen the finished film.
Yeah, I remember reading about it in one of the books that I have. It was detailing Toby Hooper's career, and it talked about that film, but it sounded to me like it was just like a drug-addled student film that he did,
right,
basically.
And that's what a lot of people did around that time. So this brings us to a movie that we've talked about. We've talked about it too much, so we're probably not going to touch on it a whole lot. But it is by far Toby Hooper's best movie. I mean, nobody can deny that. I think it's one of the best horror movies ever made. The original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Which was originally called Head Cheese at the time. I think if you actually watch some of the deleted scenes, you'll see that the it says on the director's chop block thing that it was Head Cheese. You know, that was the working title. And yeah, this movie just, I think more than Hooper himself, it was just, we've said this a lot, a product of the time, and it was just, it was like that song, One Moment in Time, Uncle Bill, because a movie like that simply can't be recreated now. I mean, people have tried for the past 30 some odd years, it can't happen.
Yeah, when I look back on this movie now, and I look back at the other films that Toby Hooper has done in his career, this is one of those lightning in a bottle type situations where it wasn't so much what Toby Hooper was doing as a director. It was more, it had to do with that time period where he was at. The cat, like all those people that kind of came together to make that film, the fact that they had no money to do it in kind of led to them getting, you know, certain people like the doctor to do a lot of the special effects prosthetics and stuff, right, which made it look even creepier than it ever would have had it been like a real movie special effects kind of deal. And there was just a cast of unknowns that seemed to he seemed to let them do just some bizarre, outside-the-box type of shit,
right,
that seemed to work to make that movie. I don't think that he intentionally made the movie like we know it today. I think it was something he just kind of fell into.
Yeah, because Hooper at the time was a pretty young guy. And I just think it was one of those deals, like we were saying. It was just something that they were lucky enough to be there filming that at the time. They had it had a little budget, you know, small budget with this movie. They had actors, actresses that really got into what they were doing. And I think that the time when they filmed it was just as effective as anything else, because it was in the fucking dog days of summer in South Texas, 100-plus degree weather. You know, it was just one of those movies that nobody could ever come close to recreating it, and people should really quit trying.
Yeah, but not to take anything away from the movie, though, it is one of the best horror films of all time. Probably in my, definitely in my top five, the best horror films of all time. And you really can't ever take that away from him, so that's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
We'll give him that.
Yeah.
And a little bit of proof that you can't recreate, he especially can't recreate what he did. Let's talk about his next movie, Uncle Bill.
Well, in 1977, just a mere 3 years after Texas Chainsaw Massacre, he made a film that was very similar in both tone and story, which was Eaten Alive, starring, of course, Neville Brand and Mel Ferrer.
Marilyn Burns also.
Marilyn Burns. It's basically the same kind of story. You got this guy that runs this dilapidated old hotel in Louisiana. Anybody that comes to this place, if they get on his nerves, or just if he wants to, they get fed to the crocodiles, or is it alligators? I don't remember which. But there's something that he's got living out in this swamp beside the hotel. And, of course, he's like a crazy son of a bitch.
He has like this scythe.
Mm-hmm.
This movie was just unbelievably boring. I mean, there's a few people I know that are fans of Dead Pit that like this. I mean, I can understand, because I like the way it was shot, the way it looked and everything. It looked like a classic, you know, midnight movie style film. But it was just boring. I mean, I watched this movie again a couple of years ago when it came out on DVD. And I can remember when we rented the movie back in the day, and it was the same feeling that I got. I mean, it was just like you were waiting and waiting and waiting for something good to happen.
It was like he was trying to capture the same kind of frantic energy that was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The only problem was this time he actually had, it was cheap, but it was like studio cheap. Like all the sets in the film, they're clearly sets. Like it's not like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre where you can tell, they just went out somewhere in fucking Texas and filmed the shit. Like they didn't have anything to do with building any of the sets or anything. This is there's maybe two or three sets in the whole film that all look really bad. Like, the set design is really bad in this film. You can clearly tell that all that stuff is staged. And, like you said, it is one of those movies where it's almost too crazy for its own good. There's not even really a story there to hold all anything together.
Yeah. Robert Englund is also in this.
He's Buck.
Yeah, and he likes to fuck.
Yeah. I don't know. Some people think it's like a lost masterpiece that people don't give credit to. I think it's just kind of like a boring attempt to recreate the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That didn't work at all.
And it's proof that you can't catch lightning in a bottle twice.
No. You sure can't. It's like a studio gave him some money to try to make that film again.
So, briefly go through the next one here. The Dark, which I've never seen this. He was actually replaced in this movie by John Cardos. I've never seen The Dark. Have you?
No. It's a.k.a. the Mutilator.
Mutilator, baby. It's not that Mutilator.
No, it's though. Not the same Mutilator.
That Buddy Cooper directed that one.
Yeah.
So, we go on to a movie that I haven't seen in years, so I can't really discuss the movie that much, is Salem's Lot from 1979, and it was actually somewhat of a hit. And I know that a lot of people, still to this day, I've heard a few people say at conventions and on the show that it was one of the scariest movies they'd ever seen, you know. But I don't know what to say about it. I haven't seen
it
in years.
This has got to be one of the very first Stephen King adaptations. It's like 1979. I believe it was on television.
Yeah.
And the thing that everybody remembers about it the most is the vampire that looks like Nosferatu that comes up, and the kid that scratching on the window in the one scene. I actually read this. It's like a short story of Stephen King's, and I couldn't believe that they made it into anything because it's really short. Like, there's not a lot of material there.
Right.
I would say that the majority of stuff that he came up with, even though it's been a long time since I watched this too, was off the cuff. Like, he had to add some stuff to it because it's just, there's not a lot of stuff there.
It was off the cuff, but everybody knows that the remake with Rob Lowe was just as good.
That's true. That movie was all.
I forgot about that movie until earlier. I was actually doing a little bit of research. And there was a TV movie, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago. It was like a remake. And it had Rob Lowe in it. But
we got to get to this next one, though. I mean, Salem's Lot's great and everything. But this next one, I've actually watched a couple of times now. And it's one of those movies that, over time, you begin to realize that it's not as bad as you originally, or it has things about it that kind of grow on you, and that is 1981's The Fun House.
Woo, baby. I'm a huge fan of slasher films, but to me, this was like probably my second favorite Tobe Hooper movie, actually. It's just the classic slasher style. I mean, a group of teens hide out in this fun house. I have no reason. No explanation why, really. I think that they were just going to fuck each other or something.
Right, they don't really need a reason.
And they find, like, a lot of odd things in this particular fun house. Like, the killer in the fun house is, it's not really one of those deals where it's a mystery who the killer is. You know who the killer is early on. It's like this, what do they explain he is, really? I mean, I know he helps out with the carnival and all that shit, but is he retarded? Is he, like,
I don't know what the hell it's supposed to be, really.
He looks like a fucking alien.
Yeah, it looks like some sort of a mongoloid Jason, you know, from the original Friday the 13th looking thing. Like, his head is ridiculously fucking big and deformed.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where it's kind of comical, but yeah. I don't know if you remember the scene I always remember in that movie that always to this day cracks me up. There's a scene where he kills a psychic, like, at the beginning. That's what they see, the teens see, that gets them,
right,
you know, to know that he's even in that
she
place.
She jerks him off.
She's giving him like a hand job or something. It's one of the most bizarre sequences. Like, God, how the hell did he even come up with that?
Yeah. This is one of those movies, though, back in the glory days of Laserdiscs. And when I say the glory days of Laserdiscs, I remember when you could buy these new Laserdiscs. Like, this was one of them that I bought brand new from these sites that were for like $3, because this was when Laserdisc was pretty much, the format was, it was the first year it was sort of gone, you know, so you could get them really cheap. And I remember watching this movie and just really falling in love with it because I'm a huge slasher fan anyway.
Well, it's the classic year, too, 1981. Yeah. It's like you can thank Friday the 13th for all the films that were like this because all the films that had these deformed killers that were going through killing, you know, a bunch. This movie also is almost, or I guess Hell Night actually reminds me of this movie because it's basically the same exact premise except Hell Night takes place in like a big house for like a sorority initiation.
They're pretty similar movies, actually. But yeah, I mean, The Funhouse, if you guys are fans of slasher movies and haven't seen The Funhouse, I highly recommend that one. I mean, Hooper actually did a pretty decent job with this one.
Yeah. Amazingly, the atmosphere in that movie is really good.
So another one, though, that we've seen that he was actually replaced on as well. Hooper must have got an ego or something. He was like, fuck you. I don't want to do it like that. You know.
Yeah.
It was Venom.
Is this the Venom that we saw that with Klaus Kinski? Yeah.
With the snake.
Yeah. Okay, well, I don't know. That looks like something that Tobey Hooper would enjoy directing.
I know.
Here's another one in 1982 that he was actually replaced on as well, which is Poltergeist.
Yeah, Steven Spielberg replaced him on that.
I don't give a fuck what anybody says. You say whatever you want to. That movie was not directed by Tobey Hooper. Now, it just, nothing else that he ever directed looked anything like that. All his movies had a certain look to them, and all Steven Spielberg's movies had a certain look to them, and this movie looks like a damn Steven Spielberg movie.
Something else that's funny, though, that I heard is Tobey Hooper actually turned down the offer to direct E.T. right around that same time.
Fuck E.T. Let's do spontaneous combustion.
E.T. sounds pretty stupid.
So
Tobey Hooper's made a lot of bad business moves over the years, hasn't he?
Let's give Tobey Hooper the benefit of the doubt, though, and say that he did direct Poltergeist, even though I know he didn't. Poltergeist is one of the classic ghost stories of the modern era. Probably the classic ghost story about a family lives in a house built over an Indian burial ground, of course.
Uh-oh.
Where the kid starts to see stuff in the television, which is supposed to be spirits coming through from the other side. And after that period, all this stuff starts to happen in the house. It's, of course, there's a lot of classic scenes in it where, you know, the abductions and the girl gets abducted, Carol Ann, and then they have to call in Zelda Rubinstein as like a psychic to pull her back from the other side.
The thing I always remember about that movie is those shorts that Mary Beth Hurt, was that her name? Or Mary Beth something?
God, what the hell mother? Is her name? Yeah. It's not Mary Beth, I can't remember her
Mary
name.
Beth something. She's got the best set of fucking legs I ever seen, I think. You remember
she's
that?
She's pretty.
That was nice.
She's probably old satchel ass now. But back then, she was nice.
She was in a big chair.
But I don't believe for a minute that Tobey Hooper directed this movie. So we shouldn't really talk about it too much.
Yeah, me either. Let's do talk about one, though, that I've seen that I don't think you've seen. It is a classic in an awesomely bad way, which is 1985's Life Force. Now, this is the beginning of Hooper's ill-fated deal with, I guess it was Canon Pictures at the time. He had a three-picture deal, folks. And guess what
three pictures, baby!
He turned out. The three pictures he turned out were Life Force, Invaders from Mars, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Now, at the time, all those movies were considered huge fucking disappointments and box office failures. But I don't think any of them is as hilariously bad as Life Force. Because Life Force was originally titled Space Vampires.
Space Vampires!
I think it was a short story. So, it's a story of a group of astronauts that are investigating Halley's Comet. This was around the Halley's Comet boom back in the 80s, alright? And they find out that there's a bunch of life-draining space vampires.
Vampires?
That live on this comet. And they bring them back to Earth because they take over the entire ship. And Steve Rell's back goes back up there. And he inadvertently takes one of them, or a couple of them back, I think.
I heard Steve Railsback doesn't like vampires.
Probably not. He doesn't like soap and razors either, I don't think. But he brings them back. And the one thing about this movie that I always loved, and I'm sure everybody else will too, one of the hottest women I've ever seen in my life is naked throughout this entire movie. And I mean, she's like the lead, and she's naked, completely naked,
ooh,
full front.
Baby.
Matilda May is her name.
Matilda May!
Does sound like somebody Dusty would talk about, doesn't it? Ooh, back home, baby, Matilda May.
I don't think I've ever seen Life Force. It's been a long time if I have seen
it. Well, the thing that the vampires do is kind of like, I'm trying to think of another film where it was like they basically seduce you and then suck all your life force out to where you're like a skeleton, little pile of dust type of deal. Right. But then the weird thing is after they suck out the life force, the people they suck the life force out of can come back and then they suck the life forces out of other people.
It's going to be a lot of life force fucking, baby.
It certainly does suck. But
a lot of fucking going on.
But, yeah, I liked it because it's one of those movies right up like with other stuff like Troll 2-ish.
That movie fucking sucks is Invaders from Mars.
I like that too, though. I like it because I saw it when I was a kid, though. That's the only reason I like that movie.
Yeah, but you know it sucks.
It does suck. Like, I always get this image when I think of that movie of Louise Fletcher eating frogs. Like, whole.
Oh, God. I know Karen Black is in this. And then some little fucking kid. Like, what?
He's going to be at Texas Frightmare, but I don't remember his name.
Yeah. Little kid in it. And, like, it's all, the movie's all tongue-in-cheek. But, like, the actual aliens and stuff are, they look so fucking stupid in this, is what I remember. Like, the main alien in it is, like, I can't remember what the situation was, but he looked like a, it just looked ridiculous. But this movie, this is another one of those movies that's like, God, is this fucking thing ever going to end?
Yeah, I mean, as for being a movie with like a, it just has some really crappy effects and acting in it, to be honest. But I liked, like I said, because I was when I was a kid, I thought it was pretty cool.
You must have been a real dumbass then when you were a kid.
What the fuck? Based on the shit you like.
But let me tell you something. Invaders from Mars is about as bad as Final Exam.
Some bitch, won't you go watch the She-Ra He-Man Christmas special and shut up.
That's better than that, too.
But it is a, like a direct remake of Invaders from Mars as far as like, it's just a story of Martians come down, take over this kid's school and his town, and he's trying to fight back against them, and he has to
with
go to
Cam Black too.
Secret hidden lair, and something about pennies, like somehow or another pennies and copper or something can kill him. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember that. Whatever, it wasn't very good.
They had to remake it again because in Eastern Kentucky, because everybody steals copper, and it wouldn't have any copper left.
Yeah. Talk about the next one, though, which is also 1986. A lot of people have been waiting on this film for a long time. I don't think anybody was anticipating what they got, though. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yeah. I mean, this movie has a cult following now. But to me, and I know a lot of people love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise as a whole, but to me, none of the sequels even are in the same freaking league as the original movie. And this one, I mean, Hooper was sort of smart in trying to make it completely different than the original movie. I mean, that was a good move. Because you're just not going to... He really made it a total dark comedy this time around. I think there was some light comedy in the first movie. But this one was just totally tongue-in-cheek and unbelievable. A lot of the stuff like... my favorite character in the movie is Jim Seidel. Because the scene where Leatherface accidentally chainsaws him in his hemorrhoids. That's fucking great. I mean, I just love that. But, you know, now that I think about it, this movie probably should never have been made. Just because Chainsaw is just so high up there. I mean, it's sort of like George Lucas and the Star Wars prequels. They probably never should have been made because the originals are just so highly regarded, you're just going to be let down overall, you know, with what you got.
I actually, though, applaud him for doing what he did because I think even he knew that that was a one-time deal that you could never, ever make anything close to that again. So he went a completely different direction with it. And in a lot of ways, it works. Like the stuff, I think the stuff with, like you said, Jim Seidel and Bill Moseley and all that stuff with Lou Perryman and the stuff in the DJ booth and all that stuff works really, really well on a lot of different levels, being comedic and being also kind of sadistic in the same way.
I think that everybody loved Carolyn Williams in that movie. I mean, I remember thinking she was fucking hot when I was 8 years old.
It's like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's kind of like every slasher film from the 80s, but not like every slasher film from the 80s. It has like a lot of the same themes, has Savini doing the makeup, but he just went 180 degrees with the characters and stuff. He let those guys, like, who would ever thought they'd bring back somebody that acts just like the Hitchhiker from the original film? I don't know.
But the Hitchhiker was in that movie as Nubbins.
Yeah, that's true.
We asked old Chop Top himself. We had him on the show last year. But Texas Chainsaw 2 is a fun movie, but in the end, like, should it really have been made? I mean, who knows?
No, probably not. But if anybody's going to make it, I'm glad that he got to make it and made it something like that and didn't try to make it like, you know, the other films that follow that were dead serious type stuff, which are essentially remakes of that movie, too.
Hell yeah!
So, no, God. We're going to skip over some of this TV stuff. It's going to take way too long if we don't. 1990, after the big Canon Pictures deal went belly flop shit ass spectacular there, he started taking to television, and then he would briefly go in and do some films, and God, I wish he hadn't have done the 1990 film he did, Spontaneous Combustion.
I can remember, we've only watched this movie once, and it was actually, well, that I can remember at least, I think Anchor Bay had like a 2-pack of this and something else. That was probably just as shitty. God, you want to talk about boring. I mean, this makes fucking Eaten Alive look like a fucking Indiana Jones movie or something. This is like, oh, God.
Makes Eaten Alive look like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It sure as fuck does. It's just like.
There should be a quote on that movie.
So, it's like the opposite of fucking Raiders of Lost Ark. I mean, it's one of those movies that as soon as you put it in there, you want to turn it off. It's just so bad. It's so poorly made.
It's got Brad Dourif in it. And normally, like, I like a lot of the stuff that he's in, but this movie, it's really fucking bad. Like, I don't remember that much about it. It's just one of those movies that I remember after we got done watching it. We were like, what the fuck?
I know it's got, like, really horrible. I do remember it having really horrible visual effects in it, too. Like, it looked like something off of, like, a Sesame Street episode in 1980.
So, yeah. Well,
Spontaneous Combustion's a huge turd. Like, I think that there was a thread on the board. Biggest piece of shit movie. That should be on the list for sure.
Yeah, it's right up there with Possession and Frankenstein's Bloody Nightmare.
So, he did a lot of other TV shit. I mean, he didn't do a whole lot of movies around that time. I mean, he did Tales from the Crypt, an early episode of Tales from the Crypt. Did a movie called Night Terrors with Robert Englund, which I don't think I've ever seen that one. I don't remember that one at all. Actually, an episode of the anthology film Body Bags he did was pretty good. I'll give him credit on that. And I don't understand how, because there's an Asian movie called The Eye that came out years later, and it's essentially the exact same story as his segment called The Eye. So it's sort of, I think Mark Hamill in the movie gets an eye transplant, and of course has visions of, you know, from the eye of the other person that possessed it before or whatever.
Yeah, I actually really like that story though, the one about the eye. Yeah. I liked it back in 93 when it was, you know, Tover, and I also liked it when Jessica Alba did it with the recent one too.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is though, wouldn't that, I mean, who come up with the idea?
I don't know. That's the thing. I have no idea. But it is a good, or at the time, it was a good original story for us.
Yeah, and I really like Body Bags. I mean, overall as a movie, I think every episode in that anthology is really good.
Yeah, the weird thing is, that's like John Carpenter and Tobe Hooper together working on that. And what were the other ones? There was one about the gas station attendant. There was
I know
one about
Wes Craven was in an episode. I don't think he directed one.
Yeah, there was one about the eye. What was the other one? Oh, the hair plugs.
Yeah.
The one with Stacey Keach. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, if you haven't checked out Body Bags, though, definitely try to find that, because it's one of those anthologies that was like really, really cheesy, but really, really fun, too.
Right.
So next,
oh, God.
He did like a ton. Oh, well, this is after this, actually. Yeah, 95.
This is good.
He decided to go back to the well for another Stephen King adaptation. He chose the wrong one, folks. 1995's The Mangler, which is about a killer fucking laundry machine.
Don't starch my shirt, motherfucker.
The other one had Robert Englund in it.
Oh my god, that's a fucking possessed laundry machine for my hell. That's one of the dumbest.
You know the funniest shit? I remember this. This was probably about 3 or 4 years ago when Walmart was having, I think they had a 388 or maybe a 488 sale on DVDs. And they had the blank room. We both passed on it. We fucking got Breeders and like all kinds of other shit, but we couldn't bring ourselves to buy the Mangler because that movie is god awful.
It really is, though. This was around the time when it was a hip thing to do for people to come up with stories based on possessions of anything. All right, we're talking about, this is around the Amityville dollhouse area where you just had everything could be possessed.
A possessed dildo.
Yeah, so this is really about a possessed industrial strength laundry folding machine that goes berserk and starts to fold people.
Oh, God.
And this detective really comes out and investigates a fucking laundry machine.
Somebody thought that was a good idea for a movie.
And Robert Englund's like the crazy old kook son of a bitch that owns the factory where the laundry machine's at, and so he doesn't want people messing around with it because he knows too much.
Stephen King should do, like, purposely write something so goddamn silly, you know, and see if
they would make
it.
I think he did.
Yeah. See if they would make a movie on it.
Oh, God. I don't know what he could come up with that would be silly enough.
A possessed toilet.
I think that's probably been done. Possessed fabric softener.
The Mangler is horrible. Stay away from it. And he also went back to TV. He's done a lot of TV. And did a straight-to-video film in 2000 called Crocodile, which we haven't seen. It's an unofficial sequel to Eaten Alive, I think.
I don't want to see it, dude.
So, and we also go to a movie that you've actually seen of his that I haven't, but I've heard a lot of people say good things about it. Was the Toolbox Murders remake from 03.
Yeah, the thing I remember most about this movie is it has a cameo by Sherry Moon Zombie who actually gets killed.
Baby.
She's like the first person in the film that gets killed. And I didn't like it. A lot of people liked it. It's got Angela Bettis in it. She plays the lead. It's the story of her and her husband are looking for an apartment, and they come across this apartment called the Lustman Arms. They move in, they start to renovate the place, and all these weird killings start to take place. And throughout the entire film, they're trying to figure out, like, what's going on, who's doing the killings, and you come to find out that it's not necessarily who is doing the killings, but more like what is doing the killings.
God,
it's
a supernatural
It's a
wildebeest.
It's a force in the goddamn building itself.
So, Hooper took a couple years off, and he released Toba Hooba Valduera.
Do we really have to talk about this fucking movie?
Yeah, I've seen it.
It's one of those movies that... It looks like a sci-fi movie. Like, if he...
It was, I think it
did
was.
Did he make it for sci-fi? Because that makes sense.
It's made for sci-fi, but it's been on sci-fi.
It's that bad. It's like one of those movies where everything in it just screams, like, I don't give a shit. I just like to make money.
The idea behind the movie, I think, was a decent one. But the problem is, they didn't have a budget. They didn't have any money. So, all the visual effects, horrible. The look of the movie's horrible. I think the only decent thing in the movie is the actual set, which, come to find out, it wasn't even a set. It was just a cool location, similar to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But it's like, I don't know. I mean, some of the actors in it did okay. But, I don't know, man. I mean, I would say it was probably better than, like, Spontaneous Combustion and the Mangler and shit, but not a whole lot better. I think had they had a bigger budget, it could have been a better movie, but,
It was the CG for me that killed that movie. Just horrible fucking, just the worst type of CG you could ever imagine. That was like the main ending of the movie too.
Right.
So you couldn't avoid it. Like it took you so out of the movie that you couldn't believe it. But I know it's about a family that moves into like a funeral home and they start to find out there's something that's possessed the funeral home or something underneath the funeral home, maybe something like that.
Yeah. I think that it's beside of a old graveyard and a group of kids accidentally bust open a tomb and the killer emerges or something. And then, like, it's got some really weird shit too where Denise Crosby becomes a zombie.
Yeah.
It's a little odd. I don't know. The movies, you can get the movie for next to nothing, even on Blu-ray. I think the movie on Blu-ray is like $7.
Yeah, I hate to rag on Tobey Hooper this much, but he's made some shitty films. Really, man. That's just the bottom line. But he also has made some shitty TV as well.
Well,
we move ahead to 2005-2006, where he did two episodes of Masters of Horror. First of which being Dance of the Dead, which I don't know. Did you ever see that one?
Yeah, I've seen it. Sucks. I know a lot of people liked that episode for some reason. That to me was the worst episode in season one of Masters of Horror. I mean, I just hated that. Like beginning to end, I hated that one. Robert Englund was actually in that as well.
I like the premise of it. It's got an interesting premise. It's just the execution is way too Mad Max-ish kind of future apocalyptic crap, but it's basically like the story of there's this nightclub and these reanimated corpses, which is where the Dance of the Dead stuff comes from, have been like electrically reborn to kind of get up and dance around and shit, and then they're kind of like, they figured out a way to bring the dead back to life, basically, and they can control them via these electrical impulses, and they keep a lot of them in these different places, kind of like relics or something from this nuclear waste time period. Like I said, it seems like an interesting premise. It probably seems a lot more interesting than it really turns out to be.
Yeah. But a year later, he did The Damn Thing, which, believe it or not, I really like The Damn Thing overall. The problem with it was the shit monster at the end.
Yeah.
And because the damn thing looked like a damn turd.
The only thing I remember about that episode, I remember thinking when it started off, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be awesome. Tobey Hooper's back to form. Because, you know, you're like, it really starts off, and then by the end of it, when that pit opens up, that big CG fucking pit, and that shit demon comes out of it, you're like, ooh, that's nice.
Well, I remember him saying I have the DVD of The Damn Thing. I didn't buy it, by the way. It was when we were getting review copies in. One of the producers or something was like, we all knew that if The Damn Thing didn't look amazing, the whole film wouldn't work. I was like, do you really think that thing looks amazing? Are you blind? The fucking thing looks like one of those damn clay fighter creatures or something from Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
But the episode overall was actually really well made. It was really well paced, and it's just a shame that it, you know, that ruined it. But, you know, that was his Masters of Horror run.
The last thing that I've got on here he hasn't even really made yet, which is another Stephen King adaptation called From a Buick 8,
right,
which is in production, 2009, supposed to come out. At this point, I don't foresee that being worth a shit.
Why do you come here being too negative?
Because he really, man, let's go back through some of this stuff. I mean, you got Mortuary Toolbox Murders, Dance of the Dead, Spontaneous Combustion, The Mangler. It's like the last 10 years have not been kind to Tobey Hooper.
That's true. But we'll just have to wait and see. I know that he was at one point rumored to direct Return of the Living Dead 4, which I think at that point was just called Tobey Hooper's Zombies.
I remember that. It had the picture of the little girl out in the like swamp.
Yeah, that was actually in magazines and shit as coming soon.
That would have been awesome to even just get to see that. I'm sure it would have been bad, but I just like to see it anyway. Tobey Hooper's one of those guys, though, that no matter what we say about him, he is in the pantheon of other people like Wes Craven and John Carpenter. Like, when I think of people that really made an indelible impact on horror films, it's just him, Wes Craven, John Carpenter, George Romero, Dario Argento, Lucio Fulci, maybe like a select few group of people that did that.
Right. And I can remember, though, in the early days of the show, Mortuary was new. People were excited about a new Tobe Hooper film, Mortuary. I mean, he's one of those guys that whatever he comes out with, he's always going to have a fan base interested in what he makes. I don't know why, because a lot of the stuff he's made in recent years has been absolutely horrible. I mean, I don't have anything against Tobe Hooper. I mean, we would love to get him on the show and talk to him because...
It's going
to
happen.
Probably not, unless we bum rush him in person. But anyway, that's the Tobe Hooper retrospective.
I wanted to mention one other thing. I think that Tobe Hooper made the movie with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre that is still, to this day, copied the most out of any other movie that I've ever seen. Like, Rob Zombie based his entire career on that damn movie. Everybody you see that movies like Saw that look like that, all those movies are ripping off Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the way it looked.
Yeah.
All those movies like that. All the, basically every movie Lionsgate puts out that's a horror movie is ripping that off.
And I can guarantee you that any filmmaker out there, no matter what genre, they would all love to have a film that's had the impact that Texas Chainsaw Massacre has had. And really, I mean, there's a handful of movies that have had that same impact. And, you know, I mean, I guess that's the biggest compliment we could give him, is that that movie will last longer than any of us. It'll, you know, it'll be one of those movies that 300 or 400 years from now, I'm sure we'll still be playing somewhere, you know, in some form, on whatever, you know, a laser chip thing or something they'll probably have implanted in your head playing it or something by then. But, I mean, it's just a movie that'll outlast everybody in the genre right now, and it'll be one of those movies, one of those handful that will live on forever. So, I mean, not a lot of directors will have that same impact, I think.
So, Tobe Hooper, we salute you, buddy.
Yeah.
Stop making films now, though.
So, we will be back after a break. We're going to talk to the fans about Tobe Hooper, see what you guys think about it. Here's a break on
DeadPit.com.
Hello, this is Sonny Landon.
And I'm Ed Ramsey.
Telling you to check out DeadPit.com Saturday Night Man.
Yeah, a lot of people recognize me from Deadly Friend. But you're going to recognize CK and Uncle Bear from DeadPit.com.
Every week, talk to the Uncle Bill and the Creepy Kentuckian live over at Blog TV.
You said go check it out now!
DeadPit.com Saturday Night Mass. It'll make you want to chew on my
dick.
Howdy-o, folks, and welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. I hope y'all enjoyed the Tobe Hooper retrospective, which actually is number 4 of the Dead Pit retrospective series.
That's true. To my knowledge, we've done a Wes Craven retrospective, a Lucio Fulci retrospective, and a Dario Argento retrospective. So now we can add Tobe Hooper to that illustrious mix.
That's right. So we're going to open up the phone lines in just a little bit, and we have a bunch of fan questions to get to, so we're going to go ahead and get those out of the way. First up, from John Smallberries. Will you guys be at Horror Hound Weekend in Indianapolis at the end of March? Tom Atkins bitches. Also, thanks, Slipcase. Check your MySpace page. There you go, Slippy. Check your MySpace page, sir.
Well, there's a problem now with that, sir. Tom Atkins ain't going to be at Horror Hound Weekend.
Now, Tom Atkins, we found out recently, canceled. Thomas Jane canceled. And
Heather
Langenkamp. Nancy from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Or, what did I say? Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, she wasn't in Texas.
I got Chainsaw Massacre on the brain.
And I think they actually did find some replacement guests. I know Clint Howard is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And who was the other one? There was, oh, Adrian Barbeau was, of course, another one of the replacement guests. How interesting.
What do you know? Yeah. As far as us going to Whorehound Weekend, I would kind of doubt it now. I mean, it would be highly unlikely. I mean, we were actually talking about it for a while, but, you know, it just doesn't look like either of us is going to have the time to get away.
We're busy men. So, yeah, we probably won't be at that one. We'll definitely make it to another Whorehound, though, sometime.
We're actually talking about possibly making it to at least one day of Wonderfest in May, which I think would be cool.
Yeah, that one's in Lexington, so that's only like a 2-hour drive.
Louisville, actually.
Is it in Louisville?
Yeah.
Well, fuck that.
But, yeah.
Go out and meet Veronica Cartwright.
Oh,
let me fuck you.
Why in all that for half an hour? Oh, I don't want to go have that shit.
Let's see. Jerry Hoare writes in, though, and says, "Hey, guys, what's up? After almost choking on the death dong last week, I decided to write into you fellas. I've been hearing a lot of acting and likable characters in slasher movies, or hearing about a lot of acting and likable characters in slasher movies. It has been talked about a lot in the Friday the 13th remake, so I guess my question is, do you think acting is a really big thing when it comes to slasher movies? Most all slashers have bad acting, and really those characters are just there to be killed off at the end of the day. So does it really matter how good their acting is in the movie?" So it's Jerry Hara. We're glad you're all right and you got through the surgery okay.
Yeah.
Had
for
the
sure.
chip taken out of your brain from the CIA or whatever.
Now, see, I thought he actually had open anal surgery.
Did he?
Yeah.
He may have.
That's what I thought happened. But, I don't know. I think we've talked about this a little
surgery
bit.
Surgery on his dick hole.
Yeah.
Let's see. Does it matter? But I think it does, though, is the thing. Like, and there's a whole other thread about this as we go down through some more of these questions, but I really do think that maybe the technical skill of the actors don't matter that much, but I definitely think that you have to have somebody that at least has some kind of quirks to them and that are interesting in some way.
Right. Here's the thing, though. Whether or not they can act or not, it doesn't really matter. But what they need to do is serve their purpose, okay? If a character is a stereotypical nerdy character, he should be a nerdy motherfucker, okay? He shouldn't be a guy that's from the American Eagle modeling agency that they just stuck a pair of glasses on, which was sort of the case in the Friday the 13th remake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I think that in this day and age, you can't, like, the thing about Friday the 13th is, back then, most of the time, they didn't even have people that, you know, that even looked like they could be in mainstream movies. You know, and nowadays, I mean, you know that's not happening. Everybody's got to be, like, a guest Gene model or Bugle Boy model or whatever the hell else is out right now, you know.
This is going to sound weird, but I think that there's way too much attempt to make shit in these movies believable, like to the point where it's so generic that it takes any of the fun out of the characters. Like Ethel and Junior were definitely over the top characters of like hillbilly folk, but that worked though. That's the thing, because it was so hilariously over the top that it was entertaining. Nowadays they just have shit like they have the same look, they have the same acting, they're generic, they don't have anything about them that you give a shit about, even, just, not even emotionally invested in them. You're not invested in them at all, they're just kind of there.
Right. Anyway, onward. Pizzal has something in regards to Toby Hooper, which the phone-in portion is about this week. He says, "I may be the biggest Hooper fan on the board, and I'm defending him always, but I'll be the first to admit that he's made a lot of shit over the years. He's made his fair share of good movies that nobody really talks about, aside from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, such as The Fun House, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Invaders from Mars, and his TV work with Taken. I'm Dangerous Tonight and the Eye segment from Body Bags. It's unfortunate that his work has degenerated to straight to DVD flicks like Mortuary and the Toolbox Murders. But hey, cocaine is an expensive drug. And don't front on Crocodile, you fun athletic guys. So in my opinion, Tobe Hooper would be a master of horror if he'd only made Texas Chainsaw Massacre simply due to the sheer and utter transcendental beauty and artistry of that wondrous motion picture. I agree with the last statement, but, you know, here's the thing. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a good movie. I actually like Funhouse and Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. But I wouldn't necessarily call them good movies. I mean, they're entertaining. They're fun to watch. But how many people out there would actually say that they're good?
I don't know. Not many. But he is right about that, though. Like, if he had only directed that one movie, he probably would still be looked upon as like a genius as far as horror films go.
That's true. So let's go ahead and open up the phone lines and take our first call. You all know we're talking about the career of Tobe Hooper this week. So let's see what we have up.
Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Hello, this is Wash.
Hello, sir.
How's it going, Washer?
I'm super. How are you guys? Wow, I fucking got on real quick.
You're the first caller.
Oh, man, that's sweet shit right there, bitch.
Hell yeah, ho. So what's been going on with you, man? We haven't talked to you in a while.
I ain't been doing shit, just playing with my dog, you know. Typical shit.
It's right. Always fun to do. So what do you think?
Playing with my dog and watching wrestling, that's about it.
Hopefully not at the same time.
Always at the same time.
Unless you're watching Beth Phoenix or somebody like that. I mean, you know, that's
oh, yeah.
Got two thumbs up his butt watching Randy Orton. What do you think, though, about Tobe Hooper? That's the, I guess, the
topic.
Portion, yeah, the topic.
What do I think about Tobe Hooper? I think he's old. And hopefully he won't make any more movies.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I saw Mortuary, and I quit watching his movies after that. But I don't think he's made any more since then, right?
I think he did the Masters of Horror mini-movies, but...
Right, those things.
He's working on... From a Buick 8, another Stephen King adaptation, so we'll have to wait and see with that, I guess.
Another Stephen King adaptation, that's what we need in the world.
Yeah. After I didn't think he would attempt one after The Mangler, but, you know, I guess he...
He's definitely, though, one of those guys that I wish somebody would make a concerted effort to, like, have, like, a petition to send him to quit making movies.
Yeah, but you know that won't work because it didn't stop Mr. Bull, so I'm sure he's still making shit.
That's very true. And it's not making any money either, which never made sense to me. So.
That's okay. He doesn't need to make money. He's got the German government.
That's true. There's something with that, like, that actually German citizens are paying taxes to you know, for the Uwe Boll fund or something like that, so he can make his next $25 million movie or something.
Maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe that's what they're doing with our government. This isn't really a bailout or for you know, the banks and shit. It's really just so Uwe Boll can make more movies.
No, here in
or
America,
maybe they're saving up so Eli Roth can make another movie.
Right.
Oh, God.
Well, I'm thinking maybe it's for Michael Bay because he keeps making these damn Transformer movies.
I did see a trailer for that second one. I didn't even know they were making a goddamn second one.
Wasn't that trailer fucking pathetic, dude?
Yeah, I was just like, is this a trailer? Is this just like leftover from the first movie? Or?
Yeah, it's awesome if you like to see a bunch of explosions and shit like come together, you know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Machinery reform and stuff.
Maybe he'll make Pearl Harbor 2 next. That's what I'm waiting for.
That's true. Or maybe The Passion of the Christ Part 2. You can work on that. With
make
Gibbs.
Bunker Hill or something.
Sweet.
But anyway, man, what else is going on? Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No, I thought this was like farewell to Jason Payne's bitch ass or something.
Well, it was, but unfortunately, we have to say farewell to Jason Payne before that because the sumbitch canceled.
Yeah. Well, if you have any special message, I called
to say hello to Jason Payne.
Special message to him, though. I'm sure he'll listen to this at some point.
Fuck, I don't know. Thanks for carting me and Adam back around fucking Louisville fucking a couple years ago. Taking us to all the wonderful White Castles and other wonderful fast food joints all over town.
Yeah, that Friday night show, and I guess it was 07, that was a whole lot of fun because we all got to go out and eat steak dinner with Kevin Tenney, director of Night of the Demons. That'll be a...
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to sit at that table. Me and Seth had to sit off to the sides and have our own little private candlelit dinner, so that was pleasant.
And actually, Bethany D. took up your spot and didn't say a fucking word the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't say much that whole weekend, so...
Yeah.
She said about as much there as she did when we took her to the award ceremony, though.
True.
Bunch of shit.
I remember that one time she called into the show before Fright Night, and she's just like, hey, and that was like it. That's all she said.
What's going on? What's going on?
Like, I wanted to call. I didn't want to say anything. I just wanted to call in and say hello.
What the hell ever happened to her? I haven't heard her mentioned forever. Is she still alive?
Her computer's still broke.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oh, man, that computer's been broke for like a year and a half.
That's true. But anyway, man, yeah, Jason Payne, he's just a real busy guy right now. He doesn't have time for Dead Pit, doesn't have time for horror. He's selling off
turning
all of his horror collection.
Turning his back.
He is. Yeah. Sooner or later, he'll be turning his back on the Lord. You know, he's really.
I don't think that'll be the day.
He's going to turn his back on the Lord like Ric Flair did against Sting.
Ooh, that's good right there.
But anyway, man, we appreciate you calling in, and hopefully you and Adam Beck can make it back up to Fright Night this year or Scarefest or something like that. It'd be cool.
Yeah, I've been looking around trying to see if there was a guest list made up for this year, but I hadn't seen one yet, so.
No, they're still working on it, I think. But hopefully they'll make some announcements soon.
Yeah, you're doing the guest booking on that, though, aren't you?
I wish.
You're like the celebrity guest booker for that show.
We have sort of booked one guest, but we can't really talk about it yet.
Uh-oh, secrets.
Yeah. Anyway, man, it's good talking to you.
I'll let y'all go and get some other chucklehead on here.
All right, man, you take it easy.
See you, sir.
All right, have a good night, fellas.
See you. Bye. That's Brian Washer. That was a fun show, though. I mean, it was probably the best Fright Night so far, no doubt. So we got another question over there from a fan, Uncle Bill, fan of the show.
No, we don't have any more. I'm just kidding. JDJ1138 says, hey guys, I didn't get a chance to call last week, so I hope you aren't too sick of talking about Friday 13th yet. I was wondering if you think the box office success of the new film is going to be a positive or negative thing for theatrical horror over the next few years. Personally, I think it's actually a little bit of both. I think studios will take notice and see that there is a market for R-rated horror and may be encouraged to take chances on more instead of the safe, watered-down PG-13 films. That, of course, is a good thing, but the flip side is they'll keep putting out remakes and sequels to remakes in that god-awful shaky cam style they apparently think people like, and original horror will continue to be ignored and pushed to DVD. So what do you think? Is it going to be... You think it's going to be a positive thing that movie made a shitload of money on the first weekend?
No, I don't... didn't have much of an impact on the success. Like, the Halloween remake didn't do much, did it? I mean, that made a fuckload of money. In 2008... there was hardly any horror films come out, so.
I just think, yeah, that they have a slot every year for one or two really big name horror remakes. And Saw are the only things they ever count on making really big money for horror films. And they could give a shit less about anything else. They'll release anything they can to try to make money. Any of those remakes like PG-13.
It'll be interesting to see how well the Halloween remake sequel does. I don't think it's going to do that well. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see, but,
I can't ever predict that kind of stuff, though. I mean, just the idea of it's stupid, but it might. I don't know.
Yeah, so we'll just have to wait and see if that'll take us another phone call, Will. Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
What's happening, guys? This is Bat32 from North Michigan.
What's going on, man?
What's going on in Michigan?
Had a whole of a lot, cold.
We actually had a pretty warm day here in Eastern Kentucky, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah? That's cool.
So, we're talking Toby Hooper this evening.
Oh, awesome. Well, shit. Eaten Alive was pretty good for a follow-up for Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Now, you actually liked Eaten Alive. You're one of the few.
Well, parts of it. I mean... what was it, a crocodile or an alligator?
I think it was a crocodile.
It was a crocodile, yeah.
Yeah, it looked like shit, but... I mean, I don't know. It was all right. I mean, what was the main guy's name? What was his name?
Yeah.
Neville Brand.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. He was pretty good. I don't know where they found him. He was kind of crazy looking, but...
As I remember, though, it was at the one of the Friday night shows, I think Uncle Bill was talking to Marilyn Burns about Neville Brand.
No, well, I think it's Mel Ferrer. Is that not a crazy son of a bitch?
I don't know.
Yeah, one of them. I always get their names confused. The guy that was actually the owner of the hotel or whatever, who was playing the owner of the hotel, she said that he was a huge drunk in real life, and like in those scenes where they're wrestling around and stuff and all that stuff's going on, that he really did beat the shit out of her like a bunch of different times because he was just so drunk that he couldn't control himself or anything.
Yeah, I mean, he brought some realism to that role, I think. I mean, whether he was drunk or not, I mean, he made it look cool. I mean, made it look real, so. But, I mean, I was convinced that he was mad, you know,
right,
he was insane, so.
As it turns out, he was.
Do you think so? Overall?
I don't know. Marilyn Burns was horrible. I mean, she just, like, pissed and moaned and cried and shit the entire movie. And then her husband, whoever that guy was, he was fucking off his rocker, too, man.
Yeah. But getting back to Tobe Hooper, though, do you think, as far as a director, that he's up there with, like, a Carpenter, a Craven, a Romero? Because they're often,
by today's standards, no. Absolutely not. I mean, he had his heyday in the 70s, but, I mean, was the last thing he... I mean, last effort that actually did anything was Poltergeist, so...
Do you think he directed Poltergeist, by the way?
I don't know. I don't know, man. I mean, there's all kinds of stories and shit. I don't know. I wasn't there, so, I mean, I couldn't say for sure. It doesn't feel like a Hooper movie at all.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I say this all the time, but he's, like, all of his films have a really distinct style. They all look almost the same, except for that one.
Yeah, but the one thing you got to look at is... You gotta think about it. I mean, Poltergeist had a way bigger budget than anything Hooper.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Is that Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2? Was that a studio picture?
It was a Canon studio picture. I mean, it was a Canon picture. I'd say they probably had about $5 to $10 million budget on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, money might be making the difference. I mean, the look and stuff, but. It doesn't even resemble anything he's ever done, so I don't know. And he hasn't done anything since then.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever seen in any other Tobe Hooper film, have you ever seen him do like a normal suburban family story like that? Like make that work?
And I think because we talked to Lou Perryman about that, Lou Perryman was briefly in the movie. I think that Hooper was director, but he was heavily influenced by Steven Spielberg. That's probably what it is.
Well, the weird thing is that you talk to somebody like him, and then you talk to somebody like Zelda Rubinstein, who says that it was Spielberg that did all her stuff. I mean,
it feels like a Spielberg summer blockbuster like Jaws. I mean, and that's why I say it doesn't feel like a Tobe Hooper picture, because I don't remember any picture being a summer blockbuster from Tobe Hooper, I mean, ever, so.
I just don't think, him and Blockbuster even go together, really.
Right.
He's just not one of those guys.
But, man, we appreciate you calling in and,
I wanted to ask you guys about another movie. I don't think you guys ever reviewed it. Maybe you have, but, Jack Ketchum's The Lost. I was wondering what you guys thought about that.
We actually did review that.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, it's been a while, though. It was probably right when it first came out. I actually rebought that movie recently because I did like it so much. It's one of those movies that stuck with me for a really, really long time. I think the guy, what is the guy's name in it, the lead?
I don't even remember, but it's got I've never seen him in anything else. But.
Yeah, but his name in the film is something really...
Ray Pye.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, yeah, Ray Pye, yeah.
His performance in that movie is freaking classic. And the end scene, too, with the big struggle and stuff that goes on in the house, like, I always thought that
at
was
the
one
end.
Of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Chris Sivertson, was that the director?
Yeah, I think so.
Was actually, I think it's the same director that did the Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, he did. I Know Who Killed Me.
Yeah. And the guy actually, I mean, you can say what you want to about that movie, but I mean, I think the guy's actually a pretty talented filmmaker overall.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, look forward to some more stuff from him. Hopefully he didn't get, banned from Hollywood for making that horrible ass Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, I mean, that first scene made me like sick to my stomach, and the end scene when he just walks up to that girl and her friend sitting in the car and he just blows her friend's brains out all over. I mean, I was like, holy shit. I mean, and they said it's based on true event. So I'm like, does this shit really go down or what? And it's fucked up.
Yeah, the setup for that scene, like, it really was one of the few scenes I've ever watched and felt uncomfortable watching it. I don't know why to this day, but it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, that's one movie I can definitely see myself rewatching too. It's just overall really well made movie and, probably one of the best, maybe the best Anchor Bay independent film we've ever reviewed on the show.
Did they get a theatrical release or no?
I don't think so.
Very limited if it did. You know? But, man, we appreciate you calling in, though.
Yeah,
and,
man. You guys have a good one, and thanks for letting me call in.
No problem.
Now you take care.
All right. Yeah, you too. Bye.
See you. I'll write that call. It's very good.
I love that feature.
Let's see. Got a question here from DarkStar69. I wanted to bobtail on Jerry's question, but focus on the likability over the acting. Doesn't likability of the characters play into the equation? Going back to the Friday the 13th characters, or slasher characters in general. Says, I think the biggest misfire in regards to remakes, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween, My Bloody Valentine, were characters who were so unlikable you didn't care about them, or they were so unbelievable you didn't buy it. To me, that was Halloween's big failure, not making Michael 7 feet tall. Its characters were so awful you hoped they died. He also says, P.S., more fucking commentaries. Hope you guys make some real cash off this. Haven't laughed my ass off like this in a very long time. That chick whoop Uncle Bill does in Phantasm every time he sees the bug creature, after saying how cheesy it is priceless. I don't even remember that.
I don't know what that is either. Unless it's that with me going, what, what?
Oh.
I don't know if that's it or there's something else.
Yeah, I think we were on to record that before Scare.
Yeah, it might have been. Chick whoop.
I don't know. We'll have to go back and listen.
I got to hear that now.
But I think what Darkstar said was pretty much dead on, especially without a Halloween remake, because the three girls when they actually started remaking the movie, they were just so fucking annoying. Every one of them, especially Scout Taylor Compton. I mean, that was the biggest problem with the movie, in my opinion, was her acting. She's a horrible actress anyway. Just be flat out honest. It's not just the script. She's annoying. It was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was saying. You don't have to make the people into great actors or anything, but they do have to at least have some sort of likability to the characters. And that's exactly what he said. I mean, you got to have something in there that is at least entertaining and makes you want to watch and care about what happens. I mean, just care about the film.
Yeah, for sure.
As far as commentaries go, we're always going to do more of those. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, whenever we have enough time to do them. I mean, we've got some that I think would be a pretty cool idea. Maybe we'll do some new Friday the 13th ones as well. I know a lot of people were wanting a part 6 commentary.
It'd be a weird one to do a commentary over, though.
Yeah. But we'll definitely do more of them. It just, you know, we don't have a lot of time anymore to do them. But for those of you that haven't checked them out, hell, they're only $3 a piece. A couple of them $4, the longer ones. So,
hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Hey, guys, this is The Runk.
What's going on, Runk? Did you get Skype?
Yeah, it's way better than my cell phone. I used to have a long distance when I used to call back in a day. That's basically why I stopped calling.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, and I can't believe how simple this was. I asked CK, I'm like, what's the name? He's like, Dead Pit, and it works pretty simple.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's better than running up your anytime minutes.
Definitely sounds better than that cell phone, too. I'll tell you that.
Well, CK, you know me. I'm the continuous technical fuck-up.
Right. Thank God. Well, you're keeping the heater levels down to, you know, bare minimum in the new videos.
Talk about that fucking heater.
I gotta go. I go to the other corner. The sad thing is, you can still kind of hear it because there's a vent right above where I'm sitting over there. It's just like the only place I can get privacy is in my basement. But that's like where my fucking heater is and everything, and the tank and everything.
Yeah.
But we're talking Toby Hooper today.
Yes, sir.
That is right.
Jesus Christ. I stick up for him a lot, I notice, but then, like, you know, kind of prepare to talk about him. wow, has he been fired from a lot of movies?
Yeah.
And there, he hasn't made a lot of classics. I mean, two of his films are dear to my heart. Texas Chainsaw, which I feel is the most important horror film for a fan like me. And then I like Eaten Alive, but that's like controversial or not really controversial. People are either like it or hate it.
Right.
When we were going back to do this show, like I had to like do research and look up his films and stuff. It's like you don't really realize how much shit that guy made till you look at his filmography, though. Like there is a ton of stuff in there that's just god awful, like Spontaneous Combustion, and I don't know if you've seen that or not, but I pray that you haven't.
See, what I like to do is just like if someone's good, I like to hear like what they've done. It's you know. That probably did something for the genre. When everyone's calling half of his movies a piece of crap, I don't watch them. So basically I watched Eaten Alive, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Funhouse, which I didn't really like at all, Poltergeist, of course, and some of his newer stuff like the Masters of Horror episodes and Toolbox Murders. Mm. Again, when people diss a movie like Mortuary, I never even bothered to watch it, especially when it has the biggest flaw, I think, that's in movies, which is CGI. So I'm like, fuck that, I ain't watching it.
That was a good call.
What about The Mangler, though? You haven't seen that one?
No, I haven't. It's supposed to be pretty bad, right?
Well, as killer laundry machines go, it's one of the top. But, I mean, as a film goes, it's pretty fucking bad. Yeah.
I mean, does it look like there's budget behind that one or anything? Like,
sort of.
It was a theatrical movie, actually.
Yeah, it's got a theatrical poster and everything. Yeah. It had to be released by somebody. I don't even know who now.
I think it was MGM.
Uh-huh. The crazy thing about him, if you look at his career from when he was hot, basically he did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, then he made Eaten Alive, which probably got a theatrical run. He got fired from a movie called The Dark, and then, like, everybody knows what... Like, Steven Spielberg or him won't straight up say what happened, is that he got replaced or Steven Spielberg did the majority of the work or something in Poltergeist.
Yeah.
And then I know there's other films. Oh, yeah, it's been said that he's been replaced on a film called Venom. Blue Underground put that out. I read that Klaus Kinski and a bunch of the crew ganged up on him to get him fired.
Well, yeah, Klaus Kinski, from what I understand, is not any fucking, you know, easy guy to work with anyway.
Klaus Kinski.
Yeah. He's pretty much a bitch as well.
Something else that people don't know about is Tobe Hooper was actually the original director behind the Return of the Living Dead 4 Necropolis or something like that.
Oh, jeez. He did that too?
He was the original director then. I think it was just called Tobe Hooper Zombies at the time or something.
Oh, okay. I knew that.
Yeah.
Like I knew he was supposed to do it because they put out like film work, poster artwork.
Before. Yeah, I can still remember that poster.
Yeah, I actually have an old Fangoria or something that had that artwork in it from right around 2003, 2004, something like that.
See, the thing about Tobe Hooper, it'd be great if you guys would get to interview someone like him, if he'd get to, like, just say what really happened on these projects. To me, he's still a legend. He did a couple major horror movies and Salem's Lot and stuff like that. So, well, it's just, he did a lot of crap later, though.
I would absolutely love to interview him. Like, he's on the top of my list of people to try to get. But, I mean, I've been trying for so long now. We even had somebody meet him in person and ask him about doing it. And, you know, nothing ever came of that. So, I've just given up hope for that. But, I think
the only chance of us ever interviewing him would be in person somehow. If we met him at a convention or something.
You ever see his, like, interviews on some of the DVD features and stuff? He seems like an interesting guy. Like, he's open to talk about stuff. Is he just hard to contact?
I've just never gotten any reply from him whatsoever. I mean, here's the weird thing. Like, from talking to somebody that met him, I know for a fact now that he got our emails because he talked to this guy about getting them, but he just never responded to any of them.
Yeah, and after it was Kelly that met him, he said, tell the guys to email me again. I'd love to do an interview with him.
Yeah.
And we emailed him again. No response. So,
yeah, some people are just like that, I guess. Well, I mean, just tell him you won't ask him about Crocodile, and he'll probably do it.
Oh, yeah. I want to ask you about the Midnight Meat Train, though, because I saw the video that you did about it. You actually seemed to like that movie.
I liked... I thought some of the characters, like, were boring. I don't like them, like, fucking art exhibit type characters or any of that type of shit. I thought the CGI gore, like the style of it, was okay in how they did it. I said, like, it reminded me of, like, 300. I don't know how he pulled that off in an urban setting.
Mm-hmm.
But, and, like, the last few scenes in the movie are pretty gory, but that's when they let some shit out, like, in terms of plot revelations that's kind of crazy. It totally becomes a different movie. Did you like it?
The weird thing about it is that I fucking hate CG in movies, but I didn't mind the CG in that movie for some reason. And it looks horrible, too, is the weird thing. Like, a lot of it, they didn't even attempt to make it look real, especially the stuff with Ted Raimi's big flying eyeball and that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I said in the video. I'm like who's a fan wants to see a flying CGI eyeball? Some reason I didn't mind it either. Did you think, like, were you surprised how the gore kind of picked up later?
The end of it, I don't know what it was about that movie, but I really did like it a lot, and I'm still trying to figure out why it is I liked it. But I think the end of it was just such a, kind of like a, you know, 180 away from what I thought it was going to be, like why that shit was going on in there to begin with, and then to end up like how it ended up. I think I was taken by surprise, which doesn't often happen, so that's why I liked it so much. But yeah, the practical stuff at the end of it was great too.
Yeah, that's what I was surprised. And another thing that kills me about movies I see is when someone's like dealing with stress in life in some of these horror films, they got to go home and sodomize their wife, which
I didn't even think about that, but yeah,
it's like why I mean, that happened in Jennifer. I think he's like, I just fucked this freak with the black eyeballs, I'm gonna go rail my wife in the ass. I'm not even trying to be vulgar, it's like, why the fuck is that going on in films?
I don't know the answer to that. That's one of those life questions.
I don't know. I guess I'll let you guys go so more people can call, because I can talk all day because I'm weird.
Yeah, cool. We can't top that anyway, about railing somebody's wife in the butt.
Yeah, you know? No doubt. But, man, we appreciate you calling in, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, guys. You have a good one, man.
See you.
See you. Well, that was run clear as a bell on fucking sky. Nice. So what other questions we got over? We all know we got more.
Try to take another call here. How much time we have left?
Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Hey, this is Rob Scatcher from Dead Pit. How you guys doing?
Who is this now?
This is Rob Scatcher.
Oh, yeah. How are you, sir?
What's going on, man?
Hey, is you guys on the line with Jason?
No, we actually canceled the Jason Payne call, and we were forced to.
Well, shit. That's all I got to say.
That ruined the fucking call for you, didn't it? I can already tell.
Well, totally did. Oh, well.
Well, we're talking.
Listening, I just wanted to wish him luck in Japan. So.
Well, we're talking about something, though, that pretty much any horror fan's probably got an opinion on. The films of Tobe Hooper.
Ah, you know, I do have an opinion on him. Like, I don't know. I love, like, Texas Chainsaw. Love Texas Chainsaw 2. I just watched, what the hell's it? It was one I never saw until recently. Like, was it the Toolbox Murders?
Yeah.
Right.
I can live without it. yeah. I don't know. Texas Chainsaw 2, man. Just like, if you, the best double feature in the world is Evil Dead 2 and Texas Chainsaw 2.
Yeah, I mean, those movies, they really work more as comedies than anything else, I think. So.
Yeah, hilarious stuff.
For sure.
But I can't.
Dennis Hopper with a chainsaw fight, this is nuts, man.
Yeah, Dennis Hopper's always really weird in that movie. Like, I could never figure out if he even knew he was in that movie. He just seems completely fucking gone or something in that.
Yeah, that's part of that film's charm, though. It was like, it wouldn't be the same movie without fucking Dennis Hopper playing like the straightest badass ever, and then you've got all these goofy motherfuckers around him.
That's true.
He does take it very, very seriously. Yeah. For sure.
For sure. But, man, we appreciate you calling, and this is the guy actually hooked us up with iTunes, because neither of us know jack shit about iTunes.
That's very true.
And I think we're going to put up a link. I'm going to try to figure out a way to put up a link on the website to the iTunes thing. So definitely appreciate that, man.
Hey, do me a favor. And the emails that iTunes sent you guys, forward those to me, because I may need to edit the picture and stuff like that sometime.
Okay, no problem.
And but we'll tell Jason Payne that you send your well wishes and on his current trip to Okinawa or wherever he ends up being.
Yeah, big old manly Christian hug.
All right, man.
Now I'm a Christian, and it was actually cool. Like, we had a big, nice, long, I met him at the Fright Night Film Festival, and we had a nice, long talk about Christianity and horror and all the shit we get from horror fans and all the shit we get from Christians for being horror fans. it was a nice time.
cool deal.
Wish him luck.
All right, man. Well, you take it easy, and thanks for calling.
Cool. We'll probably talk to you on Saturday.
All right. You take care.
Take care. Bye.
This guy, I think the same guy said that he met me at Fright Night.
And you were a fucking douchebag.
I was a douchebag to him. I was like, buddy, you look here. Them t-shirts are $20. I ain't going to sign a goddamn thing until you sign them, you buy a t-shirt off of me.
It'll be so awesome to do that just one time.
We'll start getting reputations like Tom Sweeney or something.
Just stand there and, like, look off into the crowd.
Oh, God.
Let's see. Crazy Ralph writes in and says, since this week is about Toby Hooper, I was wondering if you could do a Texas Chainsaw Massacre commentary. So, Crazy Ralph.
Yeah, we'll probably do that at some point. But the thing is,
I know a lot about that movie because I've seen so much shit about it. But
I don't want to watch that movie again for a while, though.
I don't either.
I mean,
I don't want to watch that or any Friday the 13th movie for a long time.
Yeah, for sure. Horror Explorer says, hey, I have a couple of wrestling questions for you.
Oh, this is going to make some people happy, right?
What do you think of the WWE going PG on all their shows? I personally think it sucks and that the product has suffered because of it. Also, if you had your way, who would you pick to go in the Hall of Fame this year? And it says, P.S., thanks to you guys, I can't get the phrase doodly-doo out of my head. What the hell's doodly doo anyway?
Doodly doo.
That's what it is right there.
Yeah,
it's just
you can't explain it.
It's
really
a good segue phrase.
Doodly fucking doo. I think that was born though at Scarefest with doodle.
It's true.
I don't know how the doodle. I don't know what that even means, but
it just sounds funny.
Yeah. As far as here's what I was thinking about with WWE, what they should do. Why don't they have a fucking PG show? Like, won't they make SmackDown PG? And they can have that crappy show. Because nobody watches that anyway, except, you know, retards and little kids. They have that, and keep Raw, like, the way it was.
I mean, here's the thing. I don't care that much about that. I mean, I don't think it affects the show too much. You just don't need to go G-rated with it. I mean, they did some pretty brutal shit last Monday on Raw, attacking people with sledgehammers and shit, so it's not like they're going to the freaking Sesame Street Wrestling Network or anything. I just think, like, back in the Attitude Era, they did a lot of really stupid things just for the sake of doing it, you know.
Yeah,
and
that was fun. It was, I can't help it.
But it really lost, like, I don't know, when they were doing crazy crap like that every week, it sort of lost its luster after a while, I think. It wasn't as effective. And I think if you save stuff like that, like, you know, who run over Stone Cold or something for something special, it'll mean something, you know.
So the other thing is, who would you pick to go into the Hall of Fame? Here's the thing. I think that it's weird that they're inducting Stone Cold already into the Hall of Fame. Like,
yep.
Son of a bitch, it's not even been that long since he was an actual wrestler there.
You know who I want to be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
The Tiller of Pillar, too sweet to be silver, funky like a monkey, oh yeah.
He really should be in there, man. He's like one of the only huge stars from the 80s that's not been inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Another ones I can think of. Here comes the Axe. Here comes the Smasher. Their Demolition. Walking Disaster.
That's true.
Pain and Destruction.
When they go in there, induct IRS in there.
I don't know. Have they inducted Legion of Doom in there?
I don't. They might have inducted the Road Warrior. I don't know.
Stone Cold should be years off. They shouldn't induct him in the fucking Hall of Fame yet.
Yeah, he's one of the newer generation stars. What about The Undertaker? Son of a bitch, that guy's been in there for...
He's been there longer than
20 years. He's probably, like, consistently one of the best stars I've ever had.
No doubt. So, let's take another phone call. How about that?
Hello, you're on Deputy Radio. Who's this?
Slipcase calling.
Holy shit.
Get slippy with it.
Yeah. Is that the new catchphrase?
Get slip. Oh, great. Just what I need, another catchphrase.
Oh, right? God. You know somebody's going to say that now.
No, yeah. The next show I go to is, hey, get slippy with it. I'm just going to have to kill them.
That just came out of nowhere.
Oh, God. Get slippy with it. Thank you. That was great.
Have Don May in the background going, no, 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 slippy with it.
No, 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 no. Getting slippy with it. Yeah, I can listen to that.
Anyway, what's going on?
What's going on with you?
I just got back from North Carolina. I was down there for a few days. It was this little George Romero film retrospective event down there.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah. Showing 35mm prints of a bunch of his stuff, right?
Yeah, they showed. I think some of it was they screened from DVD, because I don't know where you're going to find a print of Season of the Witch. But they showed a lot of stuff down there. They did, I don't know, six of his films, I think, and then they had a one-on-one with him, and then I showed some five-minute behind-the-scenes bit from the new movie, which promptly got bootlegged on YouTube.
Yeah, I saw that on there, actually. It got picked up by a lot of the horror websites as well.
It did. I went to sleep, you know, Sunday night. I wake up, and it's like, I took a look at this thing, and it's just like, okay, so this guy, I know where in the audience this guy must have been sitting, because I could actually hear my mom laughing at the thing at the very end of it, so I know where she was. So this guy must have been like two rows up from her.
I know who the guy was. It was Strebo.
No, it couldn't have been Strebo.
You're fucking dead. You're a dead man.
It could have been Strebo, although I did meet Strebo there, which was awesome. And then he gave me a copy of his short film, which I will watch. I just haven't unpacked yet. So.
Interesting thing, though. You were down in North Kakalaki, and you didn't come see us.
Yeah, but that's not close to where you guys are at all.
No, not really.
It seems like. It's really close, though.
I mean, it's not really. I mean, honestly, I looked it up, because I thought the same thing. It's like Charlotte to... Oh, shit. That's like 7 hours.
Yeah, it's a long ways.
You guys are not close to anything. Done something. Golly.
Yeah, I think we're... Yeah,
we're really not. We're close to a water tower. That's about it.
Oh, a water tower. Well, shit, then I'm going to go right now.
That's about the closest thing we've got to any kind of landmark.
Oh. Well, yeah. So, the what was the topic for this week? You're ragging on Toby, are you?
What would make you think that?
We wouldn't do that.
Well, I did listen to the MySpace show, the one where Jason Payne got all the lovely treatment. And it didn't seem like you had many kind words for Mr. Hooper.
Well, look. The problem is, we liked a lot of his films, and when you listen to the retrospective, that really comes through. But for the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, it's really been a downhill plunge into the depths of ass.
That's not how I would have put it, but okay. downhill plunge into the depths of ass. That sounds like a trailer for something. Sonny Landham's latest. I have to agree, and I've become a fan of a lot of his earlier work, and then like right up, Chainsaw 2 is like one of my all-time favorite movies, period. But after that, after Chainsaw 2, I can't say I've liked really much.
Yeah.
That he's done. And you know what, if you ever talk to the guy, he acknowledges a lot of the things that went wrong with a lot of those movies. He's refreshingly candid about the fact that, you know, this happened, that happened, that didn't work out, the money ran out on this one. I know there was a huge problem on spontaneous combustion, which is why that movie is so weird.
Here's the thing, though. We would love to talk to the guy, but he doesn't want to talk to us. I don't know what it is.
Well, Toby, I mean, Toby doesn't do a lot of interviews. Certainly not like radio or audio interviews. I mean, unless there's like a movie to promote. He's never really been. He doesn't really like. I don't think he really likes to do it. Just to sit and talk to the guy is kind of fun. I think you guys would have fun with him. Because, again, I don't think he would bullshit you.
Right.
Yeah, plus there's a ton of stories that we could ask him about. I mean, stuff like, not just about Poltergeist, which I'm sure a million people have asked him about, but he's got kicked off of a bunch of films and stuff, too, that, I mean, just to hear what some of the stories were behind that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Eaten Alive, he left early. He was going to do Return of the Living Dead. That didn't work out. There's been a bunch of them like that. That's fairly common for a lot of filmmakers.
There was another Toby Hooper Zombies or whatever the hell. came of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, his name was attached to, like, 15 things lately. And so I don't think any of them have panned out so far.
What about the newest one, though, that he's from a Buick 8, which I think Romero was originally attached to that one?
Right. I keep hearing that someone else is going to do from a Buick 8 now.
Yeah.
That one's passed through a couple of hands, because I think they were going to do a movie, then it was a miniseries, then a movie, then, I mean, I don't know exactly what's going on with that, but... Yeah, Toby's career is an interesting one. You know, actually, out of all the work he's done lately, I think if you look at some of the TV stuff he's done, it's better than the film stuff he's done.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically been in TV since, what, since after the Canon Pictures deal basically went south?
Yeah, because I think he did, like, he did Spontaneous Combustion. That didn't turn out too good. And then he did, you know, stuff like the Night Terrors and then The Mangler.
That's a classic.
I saw The Mangler in the theater, and boy. Then again, that's it, I gotta be. I love Stephen King, but it's a story about a killer laundry machine. It's not.
Yeah, you can't really spice that up, can you?
I don't know how cinematic that is. I really don't. I mean, that's kind of a weird one.
It's just so bizarre that was released in theaters too.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah. I know, and I saw that one in Charlotte when I was still living there. It was at the movies at Sardis. I went and paid a full price to go see The Mangler. And that's, I think, one of the reasons I stopped going to movies for a while.
Here's the thing, though, that it's weird about Tobe Hooper to me. I really, really, really like Life Force. Like,
yeah.
Just because it's so insanely bad. Like,
it's bizarre. It's a really weird film. And, well, then again, I can think of two great reasons to love that movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Matilda May is...
Oh, hello.
Lord.
Matilda May, baby!
I hate to quote a line from the Friday the 13th remake, but stupendous breasts.
Yeah.
A perfect nipple placement there, yeah. It's just really...
Oh, Lord.
She was delightful. But that movie is so bizarre. You know, it's just one of those movies you sit back going, now... Did anyone know there was a script?
Yeah. It seems like a bunch of different movies in one movie or something, too.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where, like, if Patrick Stewart were to come by one day, I would say, so, remember that movie where you made out with Steve Railsback? And he'd be like, I didn't do that. You know, it's one of those strange flicks where I think they just threw a bunch of money at it and no one bothered to realize that it was a very strange story to be spending that much money on. But I like Invaders from Mars, though.
Yeah, I do, too.
I think that one's aged very well, and like I said, Chainsaw 2, I think, is right up there with the original for me, but for totally different reasons. But then after that,
sort of like the Funhouse, too, for what it was. I mean,
yeah, Funhouse was a good one.
Yeah.
That's got some really creepy... I mean, really, a lot of his work, even Eaten Alive, which I don't think is a particularly good film, there's some great stuff in there.
Wait, didn't you do the special features on Eaten Alive?
Yeah, and Chainsaw 1 and Chainsaw 2, but
you
I
can't
can
talk shit about the movies you did special features about.
I can be objective. You know, look, I've done special features for movies I thought were crap.
Simon King of the Witches.
I somehow knew that was coming.
You knew when you stepped right into that.
Not only did I step right into that, I built the house so I could build the door so I could open that up and step into that. But that's okay. That's fine.
Oh,
that's
God.
Fine.
I didn't even watch it, but... Neither.
Of course you didn't, because, you know, you just, oh.
Something else, though, did we talk about Body Bags with you? I mean, that was another...
that was another one he was in, yeah, him and Carpenter both. Yeah, that was... I saw that once, and I never felt the need to see it again.
Really?
Yeah, I'd need to see that again, because I barely remember... I remember Mark Hamill was in one episode, and, like, didn't Stacey Keach, like, grow long hair all over the place?
Yeah.
Killer hair.
It's pretty bad. It really is a pretty bad movie, but for like when you're that age, I guess when that came out, we were probably, I don't know, 12, 13 years old, something like that. I actually thought it was great. And it is still kind of comical.
And then, like, Toby, he directed, like, the pilot for the Freddy's Nightmare series.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did an Amazing Stories. I mean, he did a lot of really kind of off-the-wall stuff there, and like, the after Chainsaw 2. Because for me, it's like Chainsaw 2 is, like, the turning point for some reason. Everything's like the work after Chainsaw 2 is like a completely separate Toby in a way.
Wow.
Although I like Toolbox Murders has some really good stuff in it. That had some very atmospheric moments in it. It's just I didn't think the film really held together for some reason.
No, that seems to be his problem a lot lately too. I don't know what it is.
I don't know why. I mean, did you see Mortuary?
Yes.
I have the Blu-ray of Mortuary.
Lucky you.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, Mr. Blu-ray, congratulations. You own Blu-ray of Mortuary. Good for you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's man. No, I got to tell you. I mean, some of these movies, I just wonder if they ran out of money. Because I know the funding ran out on Toolbox. That's why that movie got kind of shortchanged. And Spontaneous Combustion, there was a money problem. I mean, there was a lot of stuff could kind of just come out of nowhere and just slap these movies down. And I don't know if it's necessarily Toby's fault, but then on some of them you do have to wonder. Because I remember turning on Sci-Fi and watching this horrible, cheap-looking Killer Crocodile movie, and I'm thinking, good God, what is this? Turns out it was Crocodile.
Right.
By Toby, and I'm like, oh, no. I'm just like, what happened here, man? But yeah. I really like the guy, and I really wish that he would, because I know he's a talented dude, but something seems to kind of either derail on him or people screw it up or something happens, and I don't know what it is, but I know he's capable of doing really great stuff.
Yeah.
And he's proven that.
It just seems like he's got, like, director's ADD or something. Like, he'll get not all of his movies, but a bunch of his movies will get to, like, the middle part, and mm-hmm. it's like he just fucking doesn't care anymore or something. Like,
there does seem to be a fall-off. Like, that Toolbox was like that.
Mortuary was a little bit like that, too, actually.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean...
Yeah, I didn't really even finish Mortuary, so I can't, be objective about that one.
The main thing about Mortuary is just, like, who designed the CG in that? Because, it's just... I don't know.
Well, that's the problem. If you don't have the money to do CG properly, you really shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because it just stands out like a sore thumb. Although, and I'm split on his Masters of Horror episodes. I did not care for Dance of the Dead because the editing made me sick. And then but the damn thing I did like.
Until you saw the damn thing, right?
Yeah, that's what it's actually called. I like the damn thing. I thought that one was actually a surprising improvement. So, it's... I don't know, man. I stand by the dude till, he makes his last movie. I'll always be there for whatever he does. But he has had some inconsistencies. But I don't think he deserves a lot. He gets thrown under the bus by a lot of people way too easily. He really does. And he's done way too much good work for that. But, let's face it. There's really not too many ways you can defend Spontaneous Combustion.
No, and we talk about that as well. But
that one's a weird one, man. Oof.
One thing I wanted to ask you, you'd probably be the guy that would know this for sure. His first, very first film, Eggshells, is that available on anything, or is that just like a lost film?
No, it's not. It was never released, and it's technically speaking, it's not lost. The materials for all that, as well as a lot of stuff for Chainsaw, are housed in a university. All his stuff got donated to a university. In their archives down in Texas. I think it's the University of Austin. And I think that's where all that stuff is. But, like, the negatives and everything for Eggshells are all down there.
Really?
But it's one of those things where I don't know if it's possible to go in there and get the stuff and transfer it or if anyone has expressed any interest. But I'd love to see it. I'd love to see what that movie was because I keep hearing everybody talk about it.
Yeah, that's kind of my deal, too. I mean, it's supposed to lead into Texas Chainsaw Massacre, kind of like where... I mean, you kind of get an idea where he was at that stage in his career and stuff.
It's always interesting watching the short films of guys back then because they would just, it's like them just throwing stuff against the wall to see what would stick.
Yeah.
And it'd be, it may not make any sense at all, but it'd be a fascinating watch. So, but I do know that stuff's down there.
Really?
Don May saw it when he was doing the Laserdisc Chainsaw all those years ago and going through all the stuff. The Eggshell stuff is down there. But I don't know if it's possible to take it out of this collection and transfer it, or if you had to do it there, I don't know. But it does exist somehow, but it's never seen a video release ever that I know of.
Maybe that's a good thing. Who knows? But
I don't know. I'd see it, and I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I would watch it for sure. But moving on, though, I know Uncle Bill's dying to know if you're going to be in the Blog TV.
Hey, buddy, fuck you.
Oh, I like how you put that off on Uncle Bill. That was really cute.
Yeah.
Like, Uncle Bill wants to know. I don't want to know. I don't
want to win any free shit, fuck you.
I couldn't care less. Show up, don't show up. What do I care? No, I'll be there.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to be there. Yeah, I'll be there. There was no way for me to make it last weekend, but I'll definitely try to make it in. I don't know if I'll be up till 6:45 in the morning like it was last time. But I definitely will be stopping by this weekend. If I can remember, I seem to be forgetting everything this week, but I will definitely be doing that.
Cool. Well, we'll talk to you then, but we appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, and see, this has been another 15-minute conversation, so I'm guaranteeing you there's going to be at least four people on the message board saying, "There's no fucking Slippy."
Well, regardless.
Taking too long with the goddamn call-in.
Letting everybody know, though, regardless of who we took, whose phone call we took, this was going to be the last one. So.
Oh, well, in that case, I feel like big weights lifted off my shoulders here.
Yeah, I know how much you care about everybody.
I do care. I care very much. No, I mean, I really, it's important. No, it's funny. Everyone keeps offering me sympathy for that whole thing.
Yeah.
Still. He was like, "I'm so sorry that happened to you, man." It's just like, I wasn't raped, guys. I got a couple of comments on a message board. I somehow was able to wake up the next morning, you know?
He managed to carry on, didn't he?
Yeah, I did. I've soldiered on, by God, but I, you know, hey, it's funny, but, you know, hey, look, I was, just wanted to offer my defense for Mr. Hooper, in spite of the fact that some things cannot be defended.
That's very true, yeah.
So, enjoy, guys, and I will talk to you on Saturday night.
All right, man, we'll talk to you soon, and keep getting sleepy with it, I guess.
See ya.
If that happens, if one person says that to me, I'm coming for you guys. One person,
I can completely guarantee you somebody will. It's just so fucking stupid that somebody will actually say that.
I get slipping with it. Oh, God. Thank you for that.
No problem, man. Take it easy.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. So, anyway.
That was awesome.
That was
pretty
cool.
I don't know how the hell that even came about, but it was great.
So, appreciate everybody calling in. We don't have any more fucking fan questions, do we?
Lord, I don't know. Hold on. Yeah, we do.
We got one more. So let's go ahead and get that one over with, Uncle Bill.
All right. It says, I am Giovanni Frezzi, writes in and says, "I know you also have a decent collection of horror on VHS, and I wanted to know about your favorite Wizard video box art. Wizard was always awesome because they could take the crappiest film and make it look like it was going to be amazing. The one that will always hold a place in my heart is the box for Fulci's Zombie. If there ever was a cover that deserved a giant case, it was that one. I remember having a special order of that from a flea market at a video store and waiting months for it to arrive. The one that struck me as odd about it, or the one thing that struck me as odd about it, and other Wizard re-releases, is that the screen caps on the back cover were in monochromatic green rather than color or plain black and white. Black and white. Anyway, just wanted to know some of your favorites from that series of videos, and I'm sure you've seen it, but this site has a great collection of the Wizard cover art." You've got a site on there. Favorite Wizard.
First off, who the fuck can special order anything from a flea market, and how does that work?
I didn't really.
Do they, like, consult with, like, the flea markets of America or something, and, like, "Oh, I'm looking for a Wizard Zombie video."
I think consulting with a flea market just means you consult with somebody that can steal it off somebody else. You get that out here for me.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of the Wizard video stuff that I remember, I don't even know if I've ever seen the film, which is probably a good thing because I'd heard a lot of those movies are really horrible. I remember the VHS cover art for Psychos in Love. I think that was one of them. That was pretty cool. Another one was Headless Eyes, I think. I don't think I've seen either one of those movies. I just remember the covers being pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't have any idea. Like, I like VHS cover art and stuff, but I don't go through looking at the different companies and the box art and stuff. I have no idea. Not a fucking clue.
So anyway, we're going to end this segment. Appreciate everybody that called in. It was pretty active calling portion, Uncle Bill. It was time the motherfuckers called.
But, it was. It was really neat.
What we're going to do right now, though, is take a break. We'll be back with two DVD reviews, one you know and one that's a secret surprise. So we will be back after this quick break here on DeadPit.com.
You can run from Suspiria. You can hide from Suspiria.
Who's there? Who's there?
But you cannot escape Suspiria. Once you've seen Suspiria, you will never again feel safe in the dark. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
This concrete carpet is cold wall to wall. These neon rainbows hold no gold at all. You've got the night, you've got the moon, you've got the tears, right much too soon.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back here. We're going to do some announcements real quick. How'd that be?
Announcements.
How'd that be? That'd be all right.
First off, we need to talk about their YouTube stuff. We have new On the Road review, Friday 13th, that came out, like, what was it, about 2 weeks ago. We have Diary of the Dead Pits, a new one from myself, and a new one from Uncle William. We should have an On the Road this week, but it's going to be a little bit different. They're other On the Roads.
We can't really give that away yet, but I think it'll be a
you'll
classic.
Laugh your fucking ass off at it.
It will be among some of the best stuff we've ever done, I have a feeling. Yeah. But also, though, keep in mind, I want everybody to know this, because we really want to win this. That's how we are.
I like that look on your face.
Yeah. We're up for a Rondo Award. And you need to go vote for us. I think it's under what? Best webcast podcast or something?
Best audio site / podcast or something.
So,
Ballot 19.
Yeah. So what is the website? Is it rondoaward.com?
Yeah. www.rondoaward.com. And you can just, you don't even have to vote for anybody else if you don't want to. You can just vote for us.
That'd be great. Just have a bunch of people go in there and vote for us.
But also, I mean, there's other, like, the guy called in, I think Scott R.A. or Scott R.A. or whatever. He's up for an award. Whorehound Magazine's up for award. Rue Morgue Magazine's up for awards. A lot of good horror shit is up for awards.
That's true. So take time out and go over there and visit and vote. We want to make sure you vote. So when you vote, just go on the message board and say that you voted so we can keep up.
Dead Pit, I voted for him.
Yay.
Now.
Also, our Friday the 13th contest ends midnight tonight.
Oh, good.
If you want to enter it, you better hurry the hell up. We're giving away five. There'll be five winners, I guess. Each will win Friday the 13th Part 1, Part 2, and Part 3, the new collector's editions, whatever editions they are, the latest editions from Paramount. You'll be winning copies of those ones. So you be sure to enjoy that. And also, definitely can't forget, Blog TV's Saturday Nightmares. You can go to blogtv.com/people/deadpit. Last Saturday night, we were the number one rated show on Blog TV. Believe it or not, we're sort of a big deal.
That's right. So hopefully, this week will be as good, if not better than last week. We'll hopefully have over 50 or 60 people in there. It should be an amazing time. Who knows what's going to happen? I can't really say. I mean, I kind of know, but I can't tell you.
Yeah. Maybe we should start having, like, topics for the show when we talk about shit.
No. I do enough shit for this fucking show. I have to do something for that.
Do you? You do enough shit. You're going to do the fucking summary tonight, too, by the way. It's something else we go back and forth on, who fucking does the whatever for the site, but yeah. So anyway, we do have DVDs to get to, so we might as well dig right into them. First movie we're going to look at this week, Uncle Bill, is a movie from our good buddies over at Anchor Bay Entertainment. That's it, right? You're dropping shit on the floor over here and everything.
That is true, from director Patty Breathnock, who's actually the director of Shrooms, which I've never had a chance to see, but I really wanted to see that.
Patty Breathnock.
We've got a film with possibly
the most misleading title ever because it has absolutely nothing to do with the film, Red Mist.
That's right. Red Mist follows a bunch of, I guess they were
medical students.
Who, you know, a lot of them are in cliques. They, you know, they're snobbish. And there's one dude.
It's Jacko Breathnock. That's Patty's brother.
Oh, shut up, Jacko. Well, anyway, there's one particular student that doesn't really fit in with the group, and he's teased. You've seen this before. I mean, it's similar to like a movie like Slaughter High or something that in that style. And he's, you know, he's a nerdy sort of guy, doesn't really fit in with the other classmates. But he tries to make friends with this particular girl, played by Arielle Cabell, who is fucking hotter than shit. You can say what you want to, but I think that was the reason I watched the majority of this movie.
It had to be.
She was I've never seen her before, but she's actually in the new Uninvited movie, I think, and The Grudge 2, which I haven't had the pleasure of watching yet.
No. Although you can buy it for $1 down at the movie gallery if you'd like.
But he likes her and tries to befriend her, but she sort of rejects him, and eventually they sort of play a joke on him and give him some sort of drugs. Like they lace his drink with drugs and it puts him into a coma, right?
Right. They call him Freak Dog.
Yeah, that's his nickname.
But I don't know what his real name is.
I can't remember his real name.
It's Kevin or something like that. Yeah. I don't remember.
Kevin Strange.
Yeah.
So it puts him into a coma and all of the other medical students, they try to help, and they realize, well, I mean, there's nothing they can do. And then, of course, there's one guy in the group that's a total asshole that just wants to wipe his hands of everything. And, like, he's like, let's just throw him outside. You know, they throw him outside in front of the hospital and, you know, and, of course, where they're medical students, the girl sort of takes the Freak Dog guy in and checks on him every so often until she realizes that he has these occasional seizures, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about the Freak Dog guy is through, they don't really explain what, he just gains this ability to punish those with his seizures, you know. He controls other people's bodies.
Well, there's some kind of bullshit where she comes in and, like, injects him with, like, experimental drugs to try to, I guess, help him, but they haven't really been tested. And right. I'm guessing that that's what supposedly gives him the power to...
That is right. And he can, like, telepathically control people. And
it's very, very similar to films like Shocker and The Hidden, where he can, like, jump bodies from while he's in the coma and stuff.
Yeah. And it's really, I mean, I thought it was a lot like an 80s style slasher movie with a little bit of a twist. And maybe that's why I sort of enjoyed it. I mean, there's not really a whole lot of really creative death scenes or anything like that, a whole lot of gore or anything. But it was just paced like one of those movies. And I sort of liked it because of that. I mean, I think that there was relatively like nobody. A bunch of nobodies in this movie. I mean, I'd never seen a lot of them before, but,
Well, Patty Breathnock's not got the pull yet, you know, where he can draw on the aspiring.
But the leading lady in the movie, I thought she did a really good job, and I'm definitely looking forward to seeing her in more movies.
There's a movie called Coma that was made in, I think, the late 70s, has Michael Douglas in it. Some other chick. It was based on one of those movies. I think it was based on a Michael Crichton novel, actually. And that's what this movie felt like to me. It's kind of got like a very similar pacing to it, which is like a dramatic suspense type of thriller with, you know, a couple of kills thrown in there that are really kind of safe. And I don't know. It just, like that movie, it bored the living piss out of me. Like, I found it
really hard to try to get through it. I had to get through it in like different sections. I mean, it's not horrible. It's like that movie Awake. You remember that movie?
Yeah, I liked it a little bit better than that.
Where the guy's like under anesthesia, and I just don't like medical drama style shit like that to try to be like horror films. I don't know what it is.
I mean, I didn't think it was the best movie of all time, but I mean, it was only 85 minutes long. I enjoyed it for what it was. I mean, I think a lot of the reason is the girl Ariel or whatever her name is. Yeah, good looking woman. But
I guess that's the best part of it.
I liked it. I actually liked the movie, though, to be honest with you.
I think the red mist stuff comes from the fact that whenever this guy is around, because the point of the story is that he can kind of have like a after-death experience where he can come out of his own body, and when he enters into somebody else's body, it causes your nose to bleed.
Right.
And that's how you know he's around, is if your nose starts to bleed.
Yeah, although blood isn't exactly mist.
Yeah, I guess that's the red mist part of it. That's the only thing I can come up with.
Yeah. But this movie, like we were saying, is originally called Freak Dog.
Which makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, for what it is, I enjoyed it. If you're fans of, like, 80s style horror movies made today, you might want to check it out. I thought it was alright. So it's Red Mist.
Stay the fuck away from this movie.
Buddy, hush.
Now!
Shut up. AnchorBayENT.com. So, we have a surprise review next, don't we, Uncle Boo?
We certainly do. It's a film that I still have mixed feelings about, although it is a film that definitely grows on you through time. And it's one that we don't ever really talk about on here, so we figure we'd give it a whirl.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we watched this movie again recently or anything. We just picked it out of the Dead Pit Vault. So, the original film Rob Zombie directed, I'm thinking this thing was made back in 1999. Didn't come out until like 2002 or so. And it is House of a Thousand Corpses.
If you ever need any kind of vindication to think that Rob Zombie's made a career out of just ripping off Toby Hooper, who we just got done talking about. The quote on the back of this movie is from Toby Hooper's.
Hell yeah.
It's one hell of a great horror movie. I'd say it is, Toby Hooper. It's exactly like one of yours.
It is exactly like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The movie starts off amazing, okay? It doesn't. The beginning of the movie doesn't have much else to do with what else goes on. The fact is, Sid Haig is barely in this fucking movie. Which I think
he's by far the best thing in the movie, though.
Yeah, easily. But the whole movie starts off with these big motherfuckers in masks trying to rob his circus place or whatever the hell it is. Captain Spaulding's fried chicken circus.
It's like it's fried chicken, gasoline, and like a horror museum all rolled into one.
Yeah, and of course it involves Sid Haig taking the guys out, no problem. Then you follow, for one thing, this movie is, I'm thinking, entirely made, it's at night, right? The whole movie is one night, as I remember.
Yeah, I don't recall it ever being day in the whole damn film.
Until the very end, I guess. And follows a group of kids, of course, they're lost, and I think one of them is Rainn Wilson.
It is, yeah.
We were talking about recently with The Rocker. And the other guy was actually the host of Singled Out.
Yeah, Chris something. I don't remember his name.
But they pick up a hitchhiker. Gaw! Who's the hitchhiker? And I'd pick her up.
I was going to say, as far as hitchhikers go, I'd pick her up a million times before I pick up Ed Neal's ass.
Yeah, I would definitely pick up Sherry Moon's ass, especially, 10 years ago. Looked even better.
Mm. I'd pick up her ass and throw it on my dick.
You shut up.
So, we interviewed Sherry. She's a nice woman.
We had Sherry Moon Zombie on the show, yeah. You go back in the archives and check that out.
I still want to dry hump a leg, though. I can't help. So, they pick her up. And I don't even mind this group of teen, or I guess they're supposed to be teen, or college students or something like that. Yeah. I don't even mind them that much. They're actually like a good group of actors if you go back and look at it. Chris Hardwick is the guy's name of it. They're all really good actors and actresses. So they pick them up and, they pick her up and they head back to her house where the, you know, the car breaks down or has a flat tire, and they manage to get it up to the house somehow. I don't remember exactly how. I think a tow truck driver comes and gets them. Once they get into the house, they realize that something is extremely wrong, because one of the first things that happens, and another one of my favorite scenes in the movie, is they have like a really weird dinner, and it's like there's the grandfather guy that's there, there's Karen Black, who's the mother, and then there's Bill Moseley, who's of course Otis, who in this one is like some sort of weird albino fucking rip off of Chop Top from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. It's just, it's almost like he didn't know what they really wanted to do.
Well, he really didn't. I mean, I think we were talking about that in the interview. He didn't realize the Otis character until Devil's Reject. But, I mean, there's a lot of bizarre crap that happens in this movie. Like, I think that they have some sort of weird, like, stage show with Baby Firefly, and she has some odd makeup and stuff on. And I think it was at this point when you could really tell that the structure of this movie, it just wasn't happening, really. I mean, I think towards the 45-minute mark is when this movie went way downhill. I mean, the style of the movie, the music in the movie, the characters, the actors and everything in the movie is great. But he didn't have, I don't think he had much of a story to tell with his movie was the problem.
Well, he was trying to make a film, and none of those Hooper films that he ripped off had really good stories either. He was trying to make that film, I think. And kind of like a mixture between Eaten Alive and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And what ends up happening is he actually pulls that off. He has the whole claustrophobic thing down where all the kids are captured and they're all tortured and killed and all this stuff. And one lone person gets away. But then that's to me when it just is like, you can't even figure out where in the hell it was going. She falls down. One of the characters gets away and all the rest of her friends are killed. And she falls down in this, like, basement area. And, of course, throughout the film, they're always going on about Dr. Satan, who's, like, this legendary figure that's supposed to have murdered a bunch of people. And he was, like, a real doctor and stuff around this area. And so he's actually, I guess, living down in the basement. Was that the point of it? But that's not even the weirdest part. Like, after that, she just takes off running through these, like, catacombs and stuff, and that's when it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
I think, like, she finally escapes because, like, her and two of her other friends have these bunny suits on. Like, I don't know why they put them in bunny suits. Her other two friends get killed. She escapes, and, like, the end of the movie you can definitely see coming. When Captain Spaulding picks her up, you know, she thinks she's finally escaped, and we all know what happened after that if you've seen the movie, and if not, you know, go watch it. But, you know, when we saw this in theaters, now we were, believe it or not, this was difficult to see in theaters. Like, do you remember this?
Yes, I remember. Because it was like a week. I think it was a week before we saw the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake.
But we didn't see it in Pikeville. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I don't remember where we saw it at, but I know it wasn't in there.
We actually saw it in Lexington, Kentucky, and I can remember this because I actually saved the ticket. I'm one of those motherfuckers that saves the ticket stubs. But this was a movie that wasn't in, they didn't show this in Pikeville. Like, I don't know how big of a theatrical release it got, but it wasn't, like, because we were shitting ourselves wanting to see this movie, you know.
I think it was one of those ones that had a really limited theatrical run. Yeah. And I think that was by the studio's choice, to be honest.
But, I mean, over the years, like, when I first saw it, I absolutely hated the fuck out of it. I mean, I really wanted to leave. But, I don't know. I mean, a few years, I've seen it a couple times since. I like the first part of the movie. I think that it's pretty interesting, actually. But I still can't get into, like, the last 20, 30 minutes of the movie.
It had parts in it that were really, really inspired and really good. Like, there's scenes that, all the stuff with Captain Spaulding, and there's a scene where the cop gets shot, and it's like a really, really long, slow-mo sequence of that, where that cop gets shot, and then Tom Towles gets shot as well, which I didn't see that coming at all, which is another, just the way that whole sequence was filmed was amazing. But then there's stuff in it that's just god-awful, like that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So, and here's the thing, too. We saw this movie and Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake around the same time. My opinion on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake has not changed at all.
Neither with Cabin Fever.
But my opinion on this film has gotten slightly better since we've seen it, so there must be something to the movie.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be the same way with the Halloween remake.
No.
So, yeah, this is House of a Thousand Corpses. And that was our surprise review, Uncle Bill. So, what do we have planned for next week?
Who the fuck knows?
Nobody knows.
Are we ever going to start hyping that other interview?
Nobody
what the hell are we going to do that?
Oh, the Friday the 13th interviews? We'll start hyping them next week.
We're never
going
to have those.
We'll have one of them done by then. So, anyway, we're out of here. Thanks again for everybody that called in. I hope you all enjoyed the retrospective on Tobe Hooper's career. And we will be back next week. You're on Dead Pier.
Don't go, buddy.
Hey, CK and Uncle Bill. This is X and Victor's X. I'll just call in to say, keep up the good work. I love your show. William Gertler special, so get off your lazy butts, coal mining and molesting children or whatever you all do on your normal time, and get to work on a William Gertler special, and make sure you do it right. Jason Payne.
I like boys.
Whatnot.
I
whatnot. Whatnot. This is Jason Payne. I like boys. Whatnot.